Okay. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, the public and TV land here. This is the regular meeting, Thursday, August 4th, 2016, of the Harbor Advisory Board. And we do have a quorum here. We do have one person missing, which would be Alan Alward, the fisherman's position. I think that they're probably all fishing right now. So, but other than that, everyone else is present, so noted. So what I'd like to do right now is have a moment's silence. And Neil, if you could conduct the Pledge of Allegiance afterwards in a minute. Thank you, Neil. Okay, and this at this time, we go down and see if we have any announcements or presentations from the board. Jean? Lynn?
No.
I have a couple announcements. This Saturday, on August 6th, at 3 p.m. at the Unitarian Church, they're holding the Best of the Big Blue Live, which is about Monterey Bay's marine life. What this is going to lead into is a presentation afterwards on the discussion about the proposed Chumash Heritage National Marine Sanctuary. This is being put together by the Sierra Club, and also the panel members are Fred Collins, the tribal administrator for the Northern Chumash Tribal Council, Andrew Christie, the director of the Sierra Club, and PJ Webb, chairwoman of the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. So this would be a good time, if anyone's interested in learning a little bit more about an existing sanctuary from the people that run it, and then also the people who are proposing and the for the sanctuary for the Central Coast here. So it's Saturday, August 6th at 3 p.m. at the Unitarian Church, which is at 2201 Lawton Street in San Luis Obispo. Number two here is that October 1st, we do have the Harbor Festival. We have a lot of events that are going to be planned for there, so I want to make sure that everyone's geared up for that. And also on November 5th, we have our next movie night for the Friends of the Morro Bay Harbor Department. We've actually picked out the two movies. We're going to be showing two local surf movies. One is Strange Rumblings in Shangri-La and Vertical Lines. Vertical Lines was actually shot from Morro Bay all the way up to San Francisco, and there's a local surfer that is in it. And also the producer will be down to do some narration on our film here. So November 5th, 7 p.m. at The Rock, drive-in movie night. Don't forget. Neil?
None for me.
Always. Yes, I would like to make an announcement about the upcoming arrival of the full-size replica of the galleon San Salvador. This is being put on by the San Diego Maritime Museum, and also it's in conjunction with our own maritime museum here. The Central Coast Maritime Museum is going to be working this, and it's going to be, the boat is going to come in on the 28th, and it's going to be here till through the 9th of October, so we have an extended stay. It was going to be here 5, but now it's going to be here 10 days. There is, so it's going to be overlapping Harbor Fest. It's going to be at the South Tee Pier on the inside, so you can see it very well from the land. And they're going to be doing tours. And they're going to be doing tours during the week. They're going to be doing tours on the weekends. There are going to be some evening fundraiser events here and there. But they're looking for volunteers. It's a great opportunity to volunteer on this project. They about a year ago, they came and talked to us about how this works. They come and do classes, and so you know what you're doing. If, whether you're doing the tours or the ticket sales or the merchandise sales or even the cleanup. So there's 8-hour time slots for volunteering, and some of them can be broken up 4-hour. You can split it with somebody. So you need to go to MorroBayMaritime.org and sign up. That's how you can get involved in this opportunity. Another thing we're going to do, this has to do with the Morro Bay boating community as a fleet going out and welcoming the vessel when they come in. You see this kind of thing. I see it at big, huge regattas. You see this happen, you know, Volvo or, you know, just different races. Back east, you see it a lot. And we would like to see something like that happen here where we can get fishing boats and sailboats out there. And then as you get closer to the entrance, you'll see, you know, stand-up paddle boards and kayaks and everything else all the way on to the inside. And there's a couple of gentlemen who are working on making a Selenian reed boat that they're going to paddle out and greet the San Salvador. So it should be quite interesting and make for some really good photos. Anyways, that's my announcement.
Thanks, Dana. Ron?
As an appendix to Dana talking about the San Salvador, I just spent the last 3 days in a boatyard in San Diego, and she was hauled out right next to the boat I was working on. It is stunning. It's extremely well executed, and will be well worth viewing and touring and greeting, for that matter. That's a nice idea, especially the Salinan. That's ironic, actually. But yeah. Anyway, it's a stunning vessel.
Thank you, Ron. Okay, no other announcements or comments. We will go to the public comment period. I don't think that there's anyone in the public here, so we will skip that and continue to move forward. The approval of the minutes from the Harbor Advisory Board meeting held on June 2nd, 2016. Has everyone had a chance to look at those? Is there any corrections? Do I hear a motion to approve them?
I'll make that motion.
Okay, I have Gene making a motion to approve the minutes from June 2nd. Do I have a second? Okay, I have a motion by Gene, a second by Lynn. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor? Aye. All opposed? Motion passes. Minutes will be approved from June 2nd, 2016. Public hearings, reports, and appearances. Eric, Harbor Department status report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and welcome back, everybody. As you know, we've been a couple months since we had our June meeting with no July meeting. So a fair amount to update on. I'll try and be as brief as possible. Harbor Patrol statistics, so the last couple months, so you got 2 months' worth of stats, so the numbers may look a little bigger. Just divide by two, and you'll be about there. 34 emergency responses and 244 calls for service, 90 assists to other agencies, and 62 enforcement contacts. So the patrol's been pretty busy out there. All the emergency responses, I'm happy to say, ended successfully with our guests or patients getting under the care they needed and everybody surviving. So knock on wood, things went well there. In addition, over the last 2 months, we've had 7 confirmed shark sightings, large shark sightings, most likely great whites within Estero Bay, meaning Montana de Oro up to Cayucas, and 15 outside of Estero Bay. A lot of those were down in Pismo Beach, Pismo and Avila. So there's some big fish out there swimming around. So it's the time of the year, summertime into fall, so we've got sharks out there, so be aware of your surroundings when you're out there in the water. On June 16th, we had a sinking boat inside the bay. I don't know if it was a matter of not putting the plug in or maybe a hose breaking loose inside the boat, but three adults and four children were on board, successfully pumped out and towed the launch ramp. We assisted the Army National Guard. They had an interesting group of young men and women that went on kind of a survival school inland. I'm not sure where they started, but they were at least 10, 12 miles inland, I think, with no food, no water, and went through, I think, mostly public land and made their way to Montana de Oro Sandspit, and then out to the end of the Sandspit where we picked them up and brought them back. So after, I think, 14 days, they were pretty rugged. I think some of them might have dropped out, but it was an interesting group of folks that went through and did that. So kudos to them for pulling that one off.
And were they naked?
They were not naked. Oh, they were not afraid.
Gene.
We've been busy working, including today, with both sessions of the Junior Lifeguard Program, both Morro Bays and Cayucas. We do a little dock orientation talk and just let the kids know who we are and what we do. And then the subsequent day, we do some boat operations, try and do some sort of real-life lifeguard-type operations that we do off a boat or off a jet ski. So that's always popular with the kids because we get them out on the water. So session two is winding up. I think it's the second week right now, and next week is the end of the session two. Great attendance, another great group of kids, and Shane Crockett, hats off to him and his crew for putting on another great program. Moving over to the lifeguard side, been fairly busy. A few rescues here and there, a fair number of prevents. Most notable one was four persons in what I call sort of the classic case of clothed swimmers getting caught in a rip and pulled out and unable to manage themselves. Lifeguard spotted it, got out, got them all pulled out of the water, and those folks were able to return to their normal lives. So kudos to Kyle Schaefer and the lifeguard crew for that. New lifeguard tower, Zero. Bill, I know that's near and dear to your heart, and with the friends getting that to us. Surplus tower from Santa Cruz. Kyle spent the last month and a half or so since we got it, prepping it, painting it. I've got to say, it's going to put our other two towers to shame. It's a great-looking paint job. It looks like a brand-new tower. So for, what was it, $3,500 in trucking costs, maybe another $1,500, $2,000 in paint and manpower to get it all fixed up, we've basically got about a $45,000 or $50,000 lifeguard tower. It's going to need some more work over the years. We'll need to do some work on the base, but still, perfectly good tower, we'll put it into service, and Tower Zero will be somewhere near the outlet for the power plant up above on the revetment there. Give a good bird's eye view right down the surf line. So look for that hopefully soon. We're Kyle just completed all the paint and repairs, and we're working on graphics to put on it. So we were going to put it out Tuesday, but weren't quite ready, so we're hoping sometime the next week. We'll see how that goes. And then all the lifeguards and junior lifeguards competed in an annual lifeguard paddle competition down in Oceano. It's held every year. It kind of rotates up and down the county. This year is at Oceano. And congrats to our staff. Our lifeguard staff secured first place for the fifth year in a row, and the junior lifeguard staff got third place. Hats off to those guys for doing great in the competition. On the fishing front, as you know, Dungeness crab season was disappointing at best. Season opened very late in our neck of the woods. Did finally open up. I think some of the guys scratched a season together, but also scratched out salmon and as well to try and make up the difference. But that season's now closed. Most of those folks have headed up north to the albacore season up in Oregon and Washington for the summer and fall. Hopefully they'll make up the difference there. Market squid periodically comes here. We had a little run a couple weeks ago. It's been pretty quiet the last week. But you've noticed all the big, large semi-trucks parking on our waterfront. From the bottom of Beach Street, north and south, both at Central Coast Seafoods and Giovanni. So had good numbers of tonnage moving through there, which is good to see. And been a lot of bait fish in the bay, a lot of bait fish outside, a lot of pier fishing's been good, a lot of whales again in the area. So a lot of life brings in all the sea lions inside the bay and subsequently brings that larger shark that I spoke about earlier. So a lot of life out there. Moving on to council activity, recent city council activity. At the June 14th meeting, the Coast Guard considered next steps to the Coast Guard's proposal to build a new building. Directed staff to pursue one of two options we presented them. It was option number one, which was to allow the Coast Guard to build on the harbor office site. We would move our harbor office over to where the restroom is, just to the south of us, on a second floor so that we still had adequate views of the bay for safety and observation purposes. Coast Guard, in condemning our building, taking our site over, would be able to give us about $300,000. And where we're kind of hanging right now is, in order to do this, since it's not something we've budgeted and planned for, we're proposing to the Coast Guard more of a fair market rent to help make us up our loan payments, which we'll eventually have to take if we're going to build it. So that's what we're in the middle of now. That new building would incorporate a new shower and restroom facility in the downstairs, which is obviously something that's needed. So potentially could work out great, a win for all of us if we can make all that happen. Coast Guard money, I think, runs out at the end of September 2018, so we're getting not down to the wire, but from a construction standpoint, we're getting closer, so we'll see where that goes. Also at the June 14th meeting, council approved the next fiscal year's budget, which is what we're in right now, FY16-17. Including grants, our projected revenues are $2,290,666, and our expenditures are $2,266,224. Small little surplus there, not a lot. Our percent gross numbers are just starting to come in now. They're all due in July. The majority of them are in. Some folks are a little late getting their payments in and getting the reporting in. But it looks like, as you know, the last few years our revenues have exceeded what we projected. We projected the last few years a pretty healthy increase over the year previous. But it looks like we're starting to plateau out. So revenues from the percent gross standpoint will be probably about the same as last year, give or take. So we'll see where that goes. And at July 12th, City Council approved a new 30-year master lease with the Marlboro Oyster Company, one of which owners is sitting here now in the Harbor Advisory Board. New 30-year lease predicated on a fair number of improvements Mr. Maloney's proposed. Converting the former office space, which is up in front, occupied by the Women for Fisheries Group, is going to be converted over into aquaculture and seafood sales, retail sales, all Measure D compliant, of course, because it's commercial fishing is considered, or aquaculture is considered commercial fishing. Downstairs restroom gets remodeled and brought into ADA compliance. A little restroom between kind of the outer wharf area and the inner shop area. There's a restroom in between there, so that'll get converted over for customer and staff use. They'll convert the downstairs shop area eventually into retail and educational use for aquaculture tank work and also bringing in school groups and other such things. And then further down the line, building out the wharf and decking area to the full extent possible on the southern end of the lease site. It's a funny-shaped lease site. It's a triangle, I guess a right triangle, and the long leg on the right triangle is kind of curved going around the Coast Guard building, if you can picture that. So funny-shaped lease site, so he'll fill out further off the existing wharf into that southern area in front of his building. And then in the shorter term, doing a fair amount of repair, which he's already undertaken on the underside, underneath the wharf with pilings and major structural work. So can eventually turn into a 50-year lease with some options to extend. So good negotiation process and another good tenant in there. Past events, 4th of July, great showing of folks, great showing of families down at Tythams Park. Very active. Had the Harbor Patrol, Coast Guard, Sheriff boats providing tours down there. A lot of folks participating down there in great weather, so look forward to that again next year. July 9th was the city's annual Rock to Pier run. I think the estimate was about 2,500 runners. Another big success there. I think that event grows every year by a few people, so every year seemed to be a little bit more. And then upcoming events, as of this writing, National Night Out take place at, when I wrote this, on August 2, so that was a couple nights ago down at Cloisters. It's a nationwide community building campaign that nationwide, it really is primarily a policing event to introduce folks to the police departments and get them to interact. In Morro Bay, Chief Christie, who's now left us, unfortunately, she really invited in Harbor Patrol, Coast Guard, Fish and Game, Fire, all the public safety folks, and made it more of a public safety national night out. So that event went well over at Cloister, so we look forward again to that next year. And with that, I believe that's the end of my report, unless you have any questions.
Any questions here?
For Eric?
Ron?
Just a quick clarification. The $2+ million budget figures, Eric, that you were giving, that was for the Harbor Department as opposed to any other city entity. Is that correct?
Strictly the Harbor Fund.
Okay. Lynn?
Yeah. When will the statue finally be unveiled?
Great question. I don't think they have a date yet. We're getting closer, I know that, but I don't think they have a final date picked out yet.
It's been forever that it's been sitting
there. It's been a couple of months.
Okay. I know a lot of people who are very interested in coming to that event. Thank you.
Well, when it does come up, we'll be sure to post it on Facebook. I'm sure there'll be an announcement with the city website as well. We'll make sure we post it as far and wide as we can.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Hearing none. Next on the agenda here would be the update from the Marine Services Facility Boat Yard Ad Hoc Committee. So, Dana, would you like to start this presentation?
Sure. Yeah, the staff report that you have in front of you pretty well sums up everything that has been going on up to this point. And the ad hoc committee has met with Mr. Simons. And then also there was another meeting where staff and Larry Newland from the Maritime Museum and I met and talked about, answered questions and got some feedback from Maritime Museum as far as where they are, where their property, where their boundaries are, maybe, or exactly how they exist on that triangle lot, which is not an exact thing. Anyways, it brings us to tonight where we have Mr. Simons is going to give us a presentation. This is a presentation that the ad hoc committee has not seen yet, really, but we have given some input. I've already see a couple things on here that we'll probably want more input on. So I would like to just hand it over to Mr. Simons to give us all here on the Harbor Advisory Board a presentation so that we can have something to discuss and see where we want to go from here.
Okay. Mr. Simons, please state your name and thank you for coming.
Okay.
And I'm going to jump in and add that I do have all the graphics that are handed to you on the separate amount of paperwork that I gave you, so we can scroll through graphics if we need to.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman. My name is Terry Simons, and some of you I know and have met and worked with on things, some I haven't. I made a brief presentation to this body a couple of months ago when I was fresh into the pond and was still learning to swim. I've had some time now to spend with Dana and the ad hoc subcommittee. I've spent quite a bit of time with Eric. Most recently, finally managed to meet with a couple members of the board of directors of the Maritime Museum and have continued to push forward with an expansion and an elaboration of the plan originally prepared by RRM Design Group in response to the city's request for a concept plan. We normally would call this design development, although it's hardly ready to build or even ready to engineer, but certainly moving forward in a way to try to focus the city and the parties associated with interest in this facility to give me the kind of input needed to prepare enough of a concept plan to where the economics of construction and income and rents and things can be developed so that we can do a feasibility study hopefully without having to outsource that to a private entity who, quite frankly, I don't know how they would do a feasibility study on it, since the original concept plan is fairly vague and doesn't really give you a lot to go from. So hopefully I'm taking the city, helping take the city in the right direction. And worst case scenario, if we don't continue this relationship, you'll at least have a little bit more to hand off to a paid outside feasibility consultant to say that yes, it doesn't, or does or doesn't work. I got involved in this at the city council level initially when I heard that there was a proposal to spend $50,000 to do a feasibility study on something I've been very interested in for a number of years, which is a boatyard with haul-out facilities. I am a boater, have been a boater. I've been in the county for 50 years and have been coming to Morro Bay since I was a child and love boats. I currently am down to two boats in slips, along with a few other boats. And my most recent acquisition, I just put a fresh bottom paint job on in Ventura because there was no way to do it here. And I figure I've got 3 to 5 years to get this facility operational so that my next haul out can be done in Morro Bay. I'm not looking forward to having to go back down to Oxnard Ventura for another bottom paint. You have my text and that starts, I'm pleased to report continued progress. And I can either go through that or you can just read it and we can bring up some of the exhibits and I can just answer questions, or I can give you kind of an overview of this and point to the various exhibits and then see if that spawns questions or interest or wherever you want to go with this. I don't know how much time you want to spend on this, but I'm happy to be here as much or as little time as you need.
Well, how would we like to deal with this? I mean, this, right, we just got it. Why don't you briefly go through it? I mean, okay. Don't read it, you know, word for word, but.
Yeah, you can follow along, but okay. I'll basically skip through.
I think that, you know, you mentioned a couple points here, and thank you, Terry, for showing up tonight, is that we have just, at least some members of the board here, myself included, just want to see where we are, where you are, what your intent is, I guess is right. The word, and whether or not we continue with your proposal as opposed to, as you stated, go straight out to a feasibility study.
Right.
So thank you for bringing this material, and if you could go through it, it would be nice.
But before we do that, I think you raise a good point. I mean, I'm kind of coming at the city out of protocol. The normal process is that a city or public entity would decide that they want to do some sort of program. They'd put out an RFP, and then there would be designers and engineers and ultimately contractors and builders, and finally someone would lease the facility or lease it as bare land, operate it to the benefit of the private sector and in conjunction with the city. I basically jumped into this because of my building and development experience when I found out that money was going to be spent on a feasibility study, when I thought it would be better spent on elaborating the plan and then seeing if there are contractors ready to come in and take over leasehold interest to actually do the work. As we've moved through this, it's become obvious to me that there is a real economically viable project here, perhaps not the project that the city originally envisioned. So let me explain a little bit in generalities about the project. What I envision is taking a master leasehold interest in the Triangle property and ultimately providing expanded space in a building for the Maritime Museum as a public benefit in exchange for some share of the rental value of that land in the lease. That may or may not work in terms of accounting and the city's relationship with the Maritime Museum as a nonprofit. I haven't gotten far enough into that to know whether the mechanics of that are going to work. But my fundamental proposal is to build a complete facility. And that facility, if you look at the graphic over here, that sawtoothed area in the upper left-hand corner is basically what was called a boatyard storage in the original RRM plan. It was not in that location. The large white polygon is just an area allocated for the actual boat service yard the rectangle below those two elements, the large rectangle, is this multi-purpose, multi-tenant facility, which I'll start to describe more in a moment. And then the last little rectangle is just the parking appurtenant to that building. The squiggly line is the transit course from the haul-out facility, which is the little rectangle in the water down below, and to kind of go out of sequence. But one of the more significant things that I think I've brought to this in my study of the plan was the idea of not going through any of the parking lots, but to actually use the street right-of-way as the haul road, because that way you totally eliminate the potential conflicts between cars parked in parking lots. You don't have to widen the alleyways in the parking lots beyond what they would normally be for regular passenger vehicles. You save the cost of having to reinforce the parking lot paved surfaces to support the kind of weights associated with the transit lift. And you have to close the street in any case to get across the street. So whether you close it for a minute and a half or 3 minutes probably doesn't matter. I haven't confirmed that with emergency services, but I'm sure they'll find a way to work around that. And it'll provide quite a nice show for people in the parking lots to see boats moving up and down the street for the 2 to 3 minutes that it'll take to get from the haul-out facility off, back out of the street and on. I think that's a substantial savings in cost, a substantial reduction in the number of parking places in the existing lots that are going to be affected. And one of the things that I'm most proud of in bringing in this revised plan is that little enlightened idea that why don't we just use the street? Why do we go through the parking lots?
Excuse me.
Sure.
Where the haul out is, the rectangle down there, I noticed that it's not adjacent to the South T Pier. It's in a completely different area. Could you explain that a little bit?
Well, I'm not sure I understand
you. I'm wrong.
I'm not sure I understand your question, because I adopted exactly the same location for the haul out that was on the original RRM plan.
Okay, I apologize.
No problem. It took me quite a while to even understand all the pieces, and thanks to Dana, I spent a lot of time getting up to speed on this. One of the other facets, and since we're talking haul out, most of this project I see as a private leasehold improvement owned and operated by me or a subordinate company that I would form to operate this facility. But the haul-out area has some interesting nuances. One thing is that there, in the program that I finally figured out, there's a desire and a wish to have a semi-public available hoist on that on those ways that's big enough to actually back a trailer and a boat out on, and then have individuals load and unload their own boat off their trailers and into the water. Quite frankly, that's an unacceptable risk to me or anybody that I would want to be associated with, but it's a risk that the city takes on routinely with all of the T-pairs and all the other facilities that the city owns and operates. So fundamentally, that component of this I see as a city-owned facility operated by the city with a contract relationship where my subtenants who operate the boatyard can drive their travel lift over, load and unload boats, but any other city company or business like Sylvester or like Santa Maria Crane could similarly bring their big cranes over, back a semi-truck out on the way that's designed to support that kind of load, and sling a boat up and onto a trailer, or conversely off a trailer and into the water, if we were talking about a transport of a boat in from an outside area rather than coming in on its own bottom. So that's actually worked out pretty well in thinking that through. There are also questions about how do you secure that facility, how do you make it safe for the public. The city's ongoing liability with its unguarded T-piers and stuff, this would be no different than that. From a private sector point of view, to have anywhere from 12 to 20 foot drop off a short pier into the water that one would have to insure with the public constantly going back and forth is pretty challenging. Most of the boatyards that I've looked at so far try to secure those areas so that they can be monitored and the public is generally kept out. But If the city ran that, or it would be under city ownership, that would be up to the city to decide how they wanted to secure it. Additionally, at that location, we envision a public restroom and a small building that would provide equipment and facilities for short-term hauls, where, for instance, if you were doing a marine survey, you'd bring the travel lift over, pull the boat up, hang it, look at it, check it out, hose it down, wash it down, whatever it needed. Marine surveyor would look at it. You'd put it back in the water. There'd be no reason to transit it across to the boatyard unless there was some reason that it needed extensive work or the person decided to have the bottom done or whatever. So there'll be a small facility there. That could be public-private. It wouldn't matter in this formula. Any case, the first aspect, the first phase of this thing from a construction development point of view would be the storage yard, the what Dana calls the rigged boat storage yard, which is the sawtoothed area. What we envision there is getting a master lease, have breakouts in that master lease option where we'd have like 5 years to get this whole facility together. As soon as we got entitlements or created physical plant, or in this case the parking lot, that would roll over into a sublease for the master leasee, and then that could be operated as a standalone business. That business is fundamentally just a storage yard. It has its own. Oh, that's another differential. In the RRM concept plan, there was no way to drive through the boat storage area. It was basically a long pocket that you had to either back into or back out of. This design calls for the ability to drive a loop, so you're never really having to back a boat more than into a stall. I think that's an important feature, considering that you're making this available to the public, and individual boat owners coming and going may or may not be experienced enough with handling their boats to be able to handle long backing operations. This design allows you to come in through a secure gate, use a key card or a fob. It's monitored with a 24/7 security camera. Once your credentials are validated, the gate opens for you. You come in, you pick up your boat or drop off your boat. There'll be washdown facilities and restrooms accessible for the boatyard. And it's basically a month-to-month storage rental operation. We discussed that because the city has a front yard streetscape boat and RV crisis, presumably, that this facility might also help provide some alternatives for members of the community to get some of those offending boats and RVs off the street and down into a rentable facility for the short term, since we don't have the ways and all the other things done. And then as the rest of the facility evolved, we would try to shift over to primarily just rig-ready boats or other boats that would be part of our normal business there. The large boatyard area is fairly undefined. I believe that it's adequate based on the traffic analysis of the number of boats per year that we think that this harbor can support. And all of the facilities, the physical plant facilities that were originally satellite buildings, have been consolidated into the multipurpose building. Those facilities are basically the boat operator's office and their workrooms and stuff, then some additional subcontractor bays that can be rented out for repowering operation, basically a machine shop, a cabinetry or carpentry shop that could also possibly do upholstery, fiberglass and paint shop, and perhaps a small chandlery all the way down on the end. In the boatyard, there's been a concern expressed that a lot of the boat owners in the community would like to do their own work, or the DIY group. Again, from an insurance and management perspective and the security of other boats, there's a little reluctance to have these independent people have access to the main yard and facilities, but I think what we're going to be able to work out is that a portion of the storage yard can be separately fenced and accessed in such a way to where individuals who want to work on their own boats can come and go as they please, same kind of surveillance camera system, key fob entry, key card entry, without those people having access to boats that are under the protection and control of the concessionaire, who has the responsibility to those boat owners to keep those boats safe and secure. I think we'll work that out. It was an important thing that was brought up in one of the subcommittee meetings where we discussed, well, gee, we want to be able to work on our own boats. So I think we can do that. I don't think it will be a large number of bays, and we'll probably have to adopt the same strategy of 30, 60, 90 and you're out, or you pay a significant monthly daily rate after a certain period so that people don't abandon their boats there, use them as boat sales yards, all the things that have plagued Port San Luis for decades. So that is not a boat storage yard. It's get in, get your work done, and get out, or we're going to make it prohibitively expensive for you to keep your boat there. Now the main event, the big building, can we go to that's as good a place to start as any. This is an architectural rendering, very sketchy, and is dissimilar from the actual floor plans. Can you scan through and get to the one that just the blue and white? And just keep going. I'll tell you there, right there. Is that say ground floor? Yeah. Okay. This is the basic rectangle footprint of the ground floor of the multipurpose building, the main building. The upper right-hand corner, a small square, is a three-story stacked unisex-type multi-compartment restroom facility. That will be part of the first thing that will be built, along with the bank of bays that run across the top in white, where the concessionaire for the boatyard and the other subcontractors would all have individual bays available for them to rent, either directly from the master lessor or through the boatyard concessionaire, depending on how we decide to do that. The concessionaire may prefer to rent the whole thing and then bring in the subcontractors under his control, or we may just rent the concessionaire their space in the yard and then seek out individual contractors that want to have individual bays. I've already talked to a sailmaker, an upholsterer, and I have a local guy who's doing a lot of machine work and boat emergency repairs and stuff, who's based in San Luis, who would very much like to have a location such as this available, particularly. And this is the main point, particularly in conjunction with the haul-out facilities, because it's a pain to work on boats in the water. It's a joy to work on them once they're in dry dock. Below that, this, again, the ground floor, all the rest of that would be the area that would be dedicated initially to the Maritime Society, the Maritime Museum, for their exhibits. And the long rectangle that goes most of the way across, and I think there's dimensions on there, but my glasses won't let me read them, is what we call the tall ship hall. Now, Larry Newman was quick to point out that tall ships are not part of the history of Morro Bay. Sorry, my mistake. I'm not that much of a marine historian. But it seemed like a nice name. And if you look at the section, can we go to one of the other drawings? Keep going. There you go. If you look at the section, this tall ship hall has enough volume to where you can actually bring a fairly large vessel in there, jack it up, and then the lower boxes on each side are actually two stories high, which provide a mezzanine level, so you can literally deck right out onto the decks of these ships. One of the challenges of having ships in dry dock on exhibit is you can't get up on them without going up ladders or whatever. Lots of facilities have this kind of ramping out from a mezzanine. So the museum would have the entire tall ship hall, the two lower floors across the front of the building, the embarcadero side of the building that will allow for mezzanine, and then the top of the building is basically all offices. These are private sector offices. They're just leasehold spaces, and they're really that in conjunction with the boat operation is what pays the freight to buy the building and make this all happen. And the idea is that somehow through the structure of this deal, the Maritime Museum gets this space. Their only responsibility is to finish it out with their exhibits and stuff, and to operate it with a reasonable enough hourly schedule and docents and volunteers or whatever they want to do, so that it really is the attraction that they're hoping to have, because it's an added value feature for these offices, and for, not so much for the boatyard, because the lift and this and the workyard is the main draw for the boatyard and the subconcessionaires. But for the office holders on the third floor, I envision maritime surveyors, lawyers, insurance brokers, boat brokers, contract operations for people that do work very much like Regis Associated Pacific does, and different kinds of marine-associated uses and administrative offices. I talked at one point to Eric about whether the city needed any space, and there are all of the Tidelands Trust operations there. Many of those have administrative offices off the waterfront because the waterfront properties are so valuable and command such a premium for rents. You typically have to have some sort of other office somewhere else. This is a spectacular location. When you get two floors up at this location, you see everything in the bay. And it will be particularly the south side suites on that floor will have spectacular overview of the operations of the entire Morro Bay, and I think will be really premium offices for people who it's important to have that kind of overlook. Similarly, those same office suites can have private offices in the back with windows that look over and down into the tall ship hall, which adds kind of a little extra ambiance for people that are spending their days in there. They can look down and enjoy for free, which, if you will, the attractions of the museum and stuff, and their clients can come and see it. And hopefully the clients will be so intrigued by what they see through the windows looking down that they'll go downstairs, buy a ticket, and go on in and go through the whole museum. There's a symbiosis of attraction of businesses that I think is really important, and it's very important to me that I get early on commitments from the museum board to really make an effort to be able to build up to this size space. They're ready to go, as I understand it, very soon with a 400-square-foot space, which they recognize doesn't begin to house all their exhibits. And Larry and I have had some discussions. He likes having the maritime exhibits outdoors where people can see them. And my position is, well, you're giving away the show for free when you put them outside. Let's put them inside where people will pay to come in and see them. Give them some teasers out in the parking lot and along the Embarcadero, but let's have the real gems inside where people will pay to play. And so that's kind of we're trying to work through all that. Fundamentally, that's pretty much where we are. I've done some preliminary financial analysis of this, but it's dependent on a number of things as we go forward: the cost of the building, the nature of the tenant improvements that need to be done, the underlying land lease cost or participation of the city in the revenue stream of the various portions of this project as it comes along. I've been doing this for 45 years, done numerous private sector projects. I used to be a public works contractor. I've built numerous public works projects, some of them here in Morro Bay. That's not my first rodeo. This is the first time I've really tried to engage this early in the process and do a public-private partnership on a facility like this. But since the museum is a quasi-public, quasi-private entity, the city has the underlying lease, and it looked like it wasn't going anywhere, I thought I'd jump in and see what we could do. There you go.
Thank you, Terry. So I think we probably will have some questions for you. Would you like to go first, Gene?
I have no immediate questions. I need to spend more time reviewing it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I don't expect this to be a one-shot deal. Because you had not had a meeting during the summer, this appearance got delayed. Eric was insistent that I try to get down here as quick as I could for this meeting, so I put this together fairly hastily, but mostly with materials that Dana and the subcommittee and Larry Newland had already seen. So for some people, this is a rehash of previously explored materials. For some of you, it's brand new, and I understand that there's a lot to digest here.
So, Lynn?
Just on your initial diagram of the boatyard and the storage yard.
Can we look at that one?
Turnaround area.
Can we look at that?
Microphone.
My microphone's on.
No, it wasn't.
There you go. Is that the drawing?
Yes, on that one. At the 40-foot radius turnaround area, there's another. Is that a small building, or is that only for the self-service air, water, and miscellaneous? Or
yes.
Is that a restroom as well?
Could be some temporary restrooms until we get the main building. Those would be portable toilets. There'd probably be some concession vending machines and stuff. Fish bait, whatever can be put in a vending machine for the special purpose needs of the people that would be using that facility. I'm thinking perhaps motor oil, two-cycle oil, the various kind of things that are likely to be needed on an emergency or semi-emergency basis. But it's not a chandlery.
Okay. Did you not say that there were going to be special restrooms apart from the main building for the people in the storage area?
Let's go back to the...
Did I misunderstand you?
Yes and no. There. The upper left-hand corner, that square,
right,
is a three-story stack of unisex restrooms. That corner is right at the corner of the boat storage yard. And so with fencing and gating and these key fob kind of entry systems,
okay,
people can come when the first part of this building, and the first part of the building will be the white section. It can literally be built as a standalone building, and then we'll add the rest of the building in front of it. When that first floor of that first set of restrooms is done, it'll be tied and keyed to the fence storage area so that when people are there and they need to use a restroom, that restroom will be there. But the hope is that before we even get started on this building, we can get some cash flow and some interest in the site going by getting in and fencing and building the security entrance and the Embarcadero encroachment and everything to get that facility operating as soon as possible so we can see how this is going to go. I think there's going to be some fairly significant demand, but unfortunately there won't be the demand available until we can have a hoist, at least the quasi-public small boat hoist, because the reason that's going to draw people to come to this location is they can go right across the street without, they can leave their boats fully rigged, they can go right across the street, pick their boat up and put it in the water without having, because that's all an underground utility area, there's no overhead wires or anything.
Mm-hmm.
There's certainly a lot of people right now that are dragging 24 to 30 foot fishing boats from the San Joaquin Valley over here on the weekends, spending a bunch of money on fuel to get them here, a bunch of money on fuel to get them home. I haven't done all the numbers, but it looks to me that at least during the various fishing seasons, it's probably a push for people to pay a decent rent to keep a boat right there, which is just a mile from the boat launch, than to have to take it constantly back and forth to the San Joaquin Valley. And there aren't a lot of available storage areas around Morro Bay, which you may
That's
or may not
sure.
know.
Yeah. And lastly, is the storage yard, is it concrete or blacktop or dirt or
those
kind of a surface?
Eventually, I think we will probably go with some sort of permeable surface. Right now, it's decomposed granite base, and that's probably what we'll start with the exception of the encroachment area, which will have to meet city standards, and probably pave the area up through the security gate to where it wides out, and possibly pave the turnaround. Those would be fairly high traffic areas that would not do well just as base. But the actual areas where the boats park, there's a lot of logic in having permeable surfaces as boats drain out. And since they basically are not high traffic areas, boats come in, they sit, they go out, there's no reason maybe ever to do those in hard paving. The driveways probably will ultimately be either permeable concrete or asphalt. Permeable concrete's a little more expensive than asphalt, has a lot of environmental pluses to it, but if we leave the actual parking spots, the actual boat parking spots, in a permeable gravel base, which there's probably no reason not to, then our stormwater management issues are be minimized. When you pave over this much surface area, current Regional Water Quality Control Board standards kick in, and suddenly you've now got a whole nother engineering enterprise to take on to manage your stormwater, even though you're right across the street from the ocean. So I'm trying to do this portion without having to go to the Coastal Commission, without having to go even to the building department, other than just fencing and the city encroachment, because it's a pre-existing parking lot. The use isn't changing. The loads aren't really changing. The drainage patterns aren't really changing. There's really nothing that we would be doing initially that would really require any kind of governmental oversight, which allows us to fast-track that portion of the project and get some revenue stream coming. And that revenue stream will help offset the costs of all the design, development, and engineering and eventual construction costs of later phases of the building.
Thank you.
Neil?
Yeah. First, I applaud your efforts here. I do have a few questions, and forgive me if I feel like I'm poking holes at things. I'm just pretty curious here.
No, absolutely not. And unfortunately, I don't think I've done a lot to accommodate the oyster operation. But
don't worry.
Tell me
I got
what
my
you
own
need.
Building now.
Tell me what you need, and we'll work through that
I
for you.
I got my own. Don't worry. but first, I'm curious. Other than being a needed service benefit to Morro Bay, obviously, this is currently city land. Are there, and you talked briefly about the financials, but is there any financial benefit that the city could expect, being that this is in the enterprise zone? And, I mean, you kind of mentioned things here and there, but do you have any specifics, possibly, that could shed a light on?
I'll be as developed with you as I am right now.
Mm-hmm.
When Eric and I had our initial conversations about how should I take off with this, he said, well, imagine you had an absolutely blank slate, you could do whatever you want, and it didn't cost you anything for the land. That's where I started. I looked at the fact that the city is underwriting the goal of the Maritime Museum as a public benefit, and hopefully as a tourist draw that has expanded public benefit. And it seemed to me that if we could find a formula to exchange the value of the land, typically in a typical building project, you look at somewhere between 30% to 40% of the land cost basis and 60% to 70% of the building cost for the total value of the project. If we arbitrarily say 40% of the total value of the cost and hence the value of the income stream is a function of the land, but we give up half or roughly half and certainly the premier half of this building, basically the ground floor Embarcadero frontage, to a public benefit organization like the museum, that seems like a starting point for a quid pro quo balance. Give me the land, I'll give you a museum site. And then the only thing that I need in order to make it all work is I need to have some other revenue stream of my own, the boat storage yard, the boat service yard and its lease potential, the concessionaire spaces that are obviously leasable spaces once the boat yard and the lift are in operation, because then there's going to be people who are going to want to be close to that operation. And lastly, the premier suites on the top of the building because of their proximity to a public draw and the spectacular views associated with that location. It's kind of where I'm starting from. This thing has a long ways to go in terms of the business side of it, but I think until we have a concept plan, a sizing of the various facilities, an organizational pattern for circulation, and a timeline of how to get all of this built, and then a distribution of who's going to do what, I think it's a little premature to figure out what the city's financial benefit per se will be. I'm taking it more that the city is underwriting the museum, so I'll go along with that and underwrite the museum. And we'll work through it. We'll figure it out.
Okay. Other questions are maybe more specific and less in to that degree. The 48-foot height, that's what I'm seeing on that drawing of the transverse section of the building.
Yes.
Has that gone through any kind of planning ideas with that
No.
height being on the coast? I mean,
No.
Coastal Commission having
No.
say on most building heights?
Absolutely none. I spent 8 years on the Architectural Review Commission for the City of San Luis Obispo.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I learned in that process, and I went to Cal Poly to study architecture, design, and engineering, so I have quite a bit of background in exactly the interface you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
No, it doesn't meet any of the existing regulations.
Okay.
I will say that contextually, with a 280-foot structured power plant next to some 400-plus-foot stacks, I don't think that the building is going to be visually out of context with its surroundings. The other thing that's important is that this site is overviewed by a very limited number of private properties, and most of those are up the top of a 30 or 40 foot bluff, basically where we are right here. You could walk out here right now, and if that building were here and you could get to a point where you could look between here and the rock, you'd look right over the building.
Right.
So I don't see it as an issue of visual impacts. I did Bayshore Village up at the other end of town next to the golf course, and I worked through the Coastal Commission years ago to do visual impact studies and all the things associated with that. So, okay.
Well, I guess my question to follow up with what you've answered would be, because you said that you know, the project, its feasibility became realized more so once you added the third-story offices.
Right.
And if the height limit kept you to a two-story building, and the power plant was built in the 50s pre-Coastal Commission. Now there's view corridors and all that.
Oh, I understand.
So I was just, you know, something to seriously consider is if something that's going to be your major feasibility is even going to be allowable.
Eric, can you bring up the architectural renderings that follow my initial concept? Look at this section first, and you can see
that's
it's basically a big truss section, and then we'll look at the most recent. And a part of this is a timeline thing. Keep going. More. There. This is the latest evolution of that cross-transfer section. And you can see the two-story volume below with the one-story above it and much flatter roof lines and a very slight pop-up in the tall ship hall. Recognizing that this was done after it became obvious that there may be some concerns about building heights, there may be some concerns that nobody wants to put a tall ship in it anyway, why do we need such volume? This is how this project is evolving, and certainly at some point when we have the opportunity to move forward to try to vest some entitlements for buildings on this site, we'll go to City Planning Department, we'll go to Coastal Commission, we'll move that forward. Quite frankly, it's an expensive and time-consuming project. I've got thousands of dollars in this already, and I don't really have much to look at for it. To get to presentation grade renderings and drawings for just the public interface at the city council level, let alone going to Santa Barbara to the Coastal Commission, I really need to feel that I have some vested interest in this, that I have some sort of lease option on the property, that it's my obligation to go ahead and make certain milestones, if you will. As going forward, this I'm doing a 17,000 square foot multi-story multi-use building in Paso Robles right now. We're just really into the throes of the process, and I've got a set of architectural drawings that's probably $70,000 or $80,000. It's about a $6 million project, not that dissimilar in size and scale to this. A little more complicated than this, but
so. So to get back just to my line of questioning, thank you for that input. Just a couple more. I'm sorry, guys, if you don't mind. That's entertaining.
That's very helpful. Don't hesitate to take this project apart. I haven't thought of everything. I didn't even know what to think about on a lot of stuff.
So the next step will be, you mentioned as part of one of your answers to my questions, you mentioned that the museum would essentially exist in there for free. That's not my question. But you used the word that on the ground level would be initially dedicated to the museum. Just briefly, is that initially, is there something to read into initially? I just caught that word, caught my ear. Is that?
Probably a bad semantic choice on my part. What I should have said, in my initial evaluation of the project, this is the program that I came up with. I did not have the benefit of talking to the museum representatives until most recently. They seemed to be comfortable with this amount of space. I have to decide at some. They thought it was more space than they'd ever grow into. And one of the challenges for them is that while we'll provide the structure, the walls, the restrooms, we won't provide doors and windows and office spaces, heating, air conditioning, electrical supplies. We will provide restrooms. They will have a substantial uphill climb to raise the funds necessary just to finish out the amount of space that would be dedicated to them. So what's going to have to happen is we're going to have to say, okay, well, how much can you use? When can you use it? how soon do you think you'd be able to move into it? Once I commit to building the shell and the building, I'm basically locked in, but I have to know what their plans are and what their abilities are.
Right.
They've apparently are fairly well along on developing a 400 square foot, which is essentially the equivalent size of a two-car garage by comparison, building that they describe as kind of state-of-the-art and elegant and eco-friendly and all these kinds of things. I think Dana knows more about this than I would ever know. And we had some discussions around that. They're trying to raise $50,000 just to build that building.
So would your requirements for them to be your tenants be out of their scope possibly, and then therefore they'd fall short of your requirements and not be able to fill the electrical sockets needed to turn the lights on?
Well, I think before we got that far, we would have to see how, number one, how they do with their first foray into this thing. And I told them, look, it's no coincidence that there's a $50,000 need to build the first phase of this museum, and the city's dedicated $50,000 to do a feasibility study. Why don't we go to the city and say, hey, this thing works, give us the $50,000, and the feasibility study's done, because we'll put this first building in place, and we'll know right away whether this is going to be a tourist attraction of any kind. The placing of the Alma and the reorganization of some of the other marine facilities seem to go over fairly well. It seemed to be quite a flash in the local publications. I was unfortunately out of town when that happened, so I wasn't able to physically be there for the great craning and all of these things. It's an experiment. Life is an experiment.
Okay.
I'm used to taking these kinds of calculated risks. I've jumped into it this far, and I'm feeling my way along to see how much farther I go in.
Okay. One more contribution. This will be the end, I swear.
No, carry on. I'm enjoying every bit of it.
The only, you know, if we're looking at, you know, essentially like a zero cash transaction coming back to the city, and we're talking strictly benefit, while you're doing construction here, the restrooms you talked about being within restricted key fobs for private use, you would sublet the business side of the storage, the parking stalls outside, and so those people would have access to the restroom in the main 80 by 120 foot
right.
two-story building. I do see this as a huge footprint in the city and on the waterfront, and if we're talking public use, I think public restrooms should be considered as another benefit.
The ground floor level restrooms in the corner would be available to the public during some established business hours. They would be available to tenants and subcontractors and lease tenants using a key card or fob system during non-operational hours when the public would not be allowed to wander in there. We do have a transient population in here that'll take advantage of open spaces. The maintenance for the ground floor would be the responsibility of the boatyard concessionaire. The second floor restrooms are also available to the public in the context that they're available semi-exclusively for the museum, its staff, and its guests, in addition to the ground floor.
Yeah, so maybe something broader. I don't want to chop about your plans, like I said, but something maybe even standalone or something that didn't require access into the building where you wouldn't have to.
Yeah, the ground floor back corner. Ground floor back corner would be accessible from in the Embarcadero by just simply walking up past the building, and they just would be down the side. You've got security issues of lighting and all these kinds of things and hours of operation, but that's not unusual for any of the restrooms along the waterfront. So
okay. That's all I got.
But no, I have no. I fully understand the need for. I'm a longtime supporter of restaurants and stuff down on the waterfront and a constant petitioner for more public restrooms and available. I'm old, so I need restrooms more than you young guys.
All right, that's it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Neil. Dana?
Yeah, we've gone through this a number of times. But anyways, when you were talking about over at the Ways putting in a bathroom, that was part of RM's design too, to put something over there, a public restroom.
Right.
So that would help on that part of it. A couple things, just little things that I saw in here when we're talking about the storage yard and a lot of the storage yards that I've used and worked in
I don't want to say worked because they weren't boatyards, but have used basically at different municipalities and mostly at yacht clubs.
They have sure.
Big storage yards like this. In Southern California, they have big, big yacht clubs.
Right.
Big, expensive ones. And what they do is to see a vehicle travel through here is very rare. What is normally used is a very small tractor or what they call a mule, which is a powered dolly.
Right, we've had that conversation.
You just put it on. And so I just want to kind of reiterate that for everybody else thinking about this.
Right.
When you're talking about traveling and bringing boats over here to a hoist, that would be the common way to do it. I mean,
well, again, I think your experiences and your perspective and point of view come from that of a private facility like a yacht club where you have members and staff and probably training sessions on the use of the equipment and a more secured facility. This facility, you have to come all the way across the Embarcadero through a public parking lot and then onto a quasi-public lift or lot ways with a quasi-public lift. I've never seen a yacht club. The Morro Bay Yacht Club has a private storage yard across the street. You have to cross the Embarcadero. It's only two lanes wide there, through the gates, and to a secured lift that only, as I understand it, yacht club members are allowed to operate, and probably only certain yacht club members. I don't know if the whole membership is allowed to use it. They certainly have to be trained to use it. So, yeah, it's a little different experience. Quite frankly, what I think a lot of people will do is they'll drive a vehicle in, they'll hitch up their trailer, they'll drive it over there, and I've proposed reorienting the way in which the parking lot works so that the traffic flow comes across and around so that you can swing up and back in. Right now, the diagonal striping on that parking lot is in the wrong direction to do what I envision. But anyway, come along the waterfront side, which currently would be counter to the flow, and then up and then back out onto the wharf, pick the boat off, put it in the water. But the mule basically has got to do more or less the same thing. It's got to travel more or less the same course, probably fairly slowly, relatively speaking. I don't have any experience with operating a mule. I'm qualified to operate a forklift, so I know what you can do with a forklift. So.
Yeah, this is something that you would see like in Santa Barbara where they do cruise right through the streets between the buildings and everything.
Again,
and they go right out to the pier and that's another thought is you might want to investigate how they do that. The harbor does own the pier, but it is exclusive, that pier, and that lift is exclusive to two different storage yards. One is the Santa Barbara Yacht Club, and the other is Santa Barbara Sailing Club, which is on the other side of the boatyard. So
right.
it travels from around the other side of that. So just information.
Yeah.
The other thing I was just wanting to note was what we're talking about here. Well, actually, maybe I'll wait on that. It just has to do with kind of our next steps and what we're doing.
Thanks, Dana. Ron?
Mr. Simons, I have a couple of questions, but before I ask my questions, let me ask Eric a question and then make a point. Eric, what was the economic value of the Triangle lot to the city? Do I recall that its economic value was $500,000?
I don't know the number off the top of my head. If you go on to your next question, I may have it in my file, but I don't know off the top of my head.
By way of precursor to my few questions, and so the public is aware, on March 8th, the City Council authorized a Marine Services Facility Boatyard Financial Feasibility Study for the Triangle Lot site. Very shortly thereafter, the Council and the Harbor Advisory Board generally agreed to provide you with some time, Mr. Simons, with some time to develop a marine facilities proposal. So it has now been within just a very few days of 5 months. So that brings me to my first question. What is your present opinion of the estimated cost for developing a full-service marine facility in Morro Bay?
I've been operating on basically about a $5 million build-out budget for the building. Separating out the actual ways and the wet works down there, because I don't have a lot of experience in doing marine construction, and I know the harbor master and the city in general does a lot of that. But I've done a lot of buildings. I do buildings all the time. And a lot of that, of course, will be determined by what level of tenant improvements are done for which tenant and by whom, the lease rates that we can reasonably expect. But my ballpark was a $5 million building project. If, in fact, the land was valued at only $500,000, that would make it only 10% of what I expect to see put into the building, which is either the city got a very good deal or I'm spending way too much on the building. But
and your $5 million, just to be completely clear to me, does not include any improvements outside of the Triangle Lot site?
We'll probably have a small participation on the parking lot portion of the ways area for the restrooms and the special purpose storage building, but that would not be a particularly expensive building. And by the route reorientation that we've chosen, there should be a minimum amount of reconstruction of the structural sections of the parking lots, because the street's designed to handle the kind of loads we're talking about. The parking lots I don't know much about, but my presumption is that they're not as heavy a section as the streetways. And obviously there'll be some incidental work, plus the encroachment work necessary in the security fencing for the boatyard. Really kind of focusing on getting the boatyard area going first as a cash generator and then move on from there. But
And speaking of cash, in whose specific, if I may ask, you don't
sure,
have to answer,
absolutely.
In whose specific financial interests are you developing your proposal?
Well, I'm developing for my own financial interest, and then eventually, since I'm usually the first money in and the last money out, at some point when I have an entire package put together to where the city is ready to give me a memorandum of understanding saying, yeah, you meet this timeline, you do these buildings, you provide these facilities, we'll give you the land for 30 years with options to renew, then I can go to my investor pool and bring in investors to either partially fund or totally fund. Most of my investors these days like to be 100% capitalized. They don't like to borrow money. They just put their money in and they look for a reasonable rate of return, and we build a building and rent it out. So this is fundamentally just a rental project, a commercial rental project for me, with the rather unusual twist of a large portion of what would be the prime portion of the building being dedicated to a quasi-public entity, the museum, as the fair exchange for the underlying land lease costs.
So, well, you keep saying that, and it's not, and I'm not well informed on this, but I would suggest that, and you're obviously experienced enough to know this, that issue, i.e., the city's involvement, commitment, support of, or whatever, the Maritime Museum, that needs to be absolutely sorted out, because it is an independent 501c3.
Right, and it's not clear to me what that relationship is at this point.
And that, exactly. So, so do I understand from your comments to my last question that this is a speculative proposal? It's being developed on speculation. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay.
That's what all projects are fundamentally.
Well, that's a laissez-faire response.
I don't have a specific client, and I'm not building it for the benefit of the city. So it, by its very nature, is speculative. I'm hoping that by the time we have to actually build a building and fund a building, that we will have secured leases and some lease interest in the majority of the potential spaces available. The storage yard facility is a standalone winner. that can be developed and built with a positive cash flow almost from the get-go. The boatyard, as a major draw for portions of the commercial portions of the building, requires a what I would call a primary tenant with some subtenants. I've talked to a couple of different current boatyard operators, most specifically the one in Ventura, Oxnard, where I had my boat recently worked on, and they're very interested in having a satellite facility in Morro Bay. They know it's a small market, but they're comfortable with the idea of a very small manned operation. They think it's has the potential to be good, but they want to know how much is it going to cost.
Are they interested, if you know, in participating in the initial capital investment, or are they interested in paying rent as an operator?
I think that as this moves forward, that the personages underlying that operation who have made unbelievably large capital investments in the leaseholds that they have down there will probably want to come in as either a joint venture partner or a limited partner in all or part of the facility. But I haven't gotten that far yet because I don't have anything to really shop around and market. I'm close. I'm really, really close.
Okay, that's my last question. Thanks. I do have one quick comment, and that is as it relates to the concept of, and you mentioned this evening, of $50,000 that's presently earmarked for a financial feasibility study for the Marine Services Facility flowing to the museum. I would not support that. I don't think that's appropriate.
I made that almost in jest, but it's no coincidence that the dollars that the museum needs to really do a real on-the-ground market study of the viability of a maritime museum is the same amount of money that the city is willing to invest in a paper study of the feasibility of this.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
And that's how I jumped into this to begin with.
You made that point several times this evening. But just to be clear, I mean, I'm 150% supporter, in fact, of the museum, but the museum needs to pursue its path. I think a little apart and aside from the general fund or the Harvard Department's budget. Thank you.
Yeah. It's my understanding that the operational way in which the museum stores its artifacts and is intending to build its first step is that is in an old city right-of-way, and that the museum board or the museum association has been granted an encroachment permit to construct facilities in the city right away. And that's all I know about it. I thought it was a rather novel way in which to vest an entitlement in a 501c3 nonprofit, but works for me. I've worked with several nonprofits, and that seems to be, they get a lot of special deals.
Okay, Gene?
Yeah, Terry. I know you're very early on this concept on these things here, very, very early. I just have a couple of comments. I've reviewed the original Maritime Museum building that was designed by Jim Mall, and then consequently the other one that was revised recently, and they both have a maritime theme to them. I'm kind of disappointed to look at this building here. It's a great-looking barn, but I would be encouraging you guys to get some more maritime theme into it. That's just my own personal opinion. And then secondly, as I stated before, I have a problem with the ways being used for recreational boating, sailboats and small fishing boats. I feel as though that's a violation of Measure D. That's just my own opinion there. So,
I'm going to let you ping-pong that back and forth with the other end of the dais. Yeah. I am similarly disinclined to have a quasi-public involvement in what should, in my opinion, be a private enterprise activity, and is the main reason that we're not interested in being involved in the ways and the wet works, because the intention, as I understand it, is to make that available to the public. I think it's great, but I'm not conversant enough with Measure D to know whether the incidental use of the ways that basically support a commercial operation. And I don't even know that hauling boats out when they're recreational boats rather than commercial boats meets the guidelines of Measure D. I just jumped into this with both feet early on, and those, the Measure D questions, the Coastal Commission questions, building heights and setbacks and all of these things will have to be addressed as we move forward. And that's one of the reasons that this is such a tedious adventure. And just trying to help focus the efforts of everybody that has interest in this kind of thing into some comprehensive plan is basically what I've been trying to do for the last several months, with meeting with people, talking about their particular interests and stuff. And I agree. Dana and I have gone around a number of times about the nature of the boat storage yard, the way in which boats move across, and who is actually going to be allowed to operate that small crane, because it's probably not that small of a crane. It's probably 5-ton crane. I don't know. I don't know where the lines are drawn between required operator certifications for crane-type mechanical facilities and the ability to just let anybody run them with a quarter in a slot or whatever the plan is. So I've kind of deferred that over to the Harbor Department and their ongoing liability stream for all the other kinds of T-piers and ways and stuff that they have all over, because they have all the experience with that. I have no experience with what those are. But
well, I encourage you to continue pursuing this.
Thank you.
I have a couple questions, Terry. Thank sure. you. First off, I know this was short notice. I talked to Eric last week, and what we're here at the HAB to decide and to is to basically give you a sole source, at least for a little period of time, and not pursue an RFP. Now, I think we've done two or three studies on this boat haul-out facility in my period here, and I'm not so adverse to throwing $50,000 out the door. If we have someone here who is willing to do it and do a good job, benefit the city and benefit someone else. So that's something that we have to decide. I think you have prepared some information in a very short period of time. I think there's a lot of details that need to be worked out. Question that I have for you, you mentioned a couple times on the actual lift over there. I don't quite understand who is going to build that. That would be the city then, you're saying, that would have to come up with the money to actually build that? And then the second question, we the city have to basically make a commitment that this triangle lot is going to be utilized for a boat haul-out facility and various functions as opposed to a parking lot. Before we, would I want you to spend any more money or anyone's any more money? So that's where I think we're at right now in discussing this thing. But if you could answer that one question so that I have my mind, are you saying the city would actually pay for building the haul out aspect?
As the current intention of the use of the ways, being both a ways for a travel lift and a ways for a quasi-public launch facility, it's in going round and round with this, it seems, and the nature of the construction, it seems most appropriate that that be a harbor type of project. Eric and I have gone back and forth on this a couple of times. He thinks that, well, go ahead and build it, and, you know, not a problem, we'll work through it. And I'm fine with that as a starting point, but what I continue to see are public safety and security issues, and then the real killer for me is the wide way, the quasi-public driveway, if you will, the backup zone to take boats out on that pier, and the thought that a very broad spectrum number of people would have authority and or ability to hook onto a boat and swing it off of that way and drop it into the water, hopefully, without the oversight necessarily, and maybe that could be something that only the harbor master or one of his crew members does, and you have to pay a fee or buy a certification or be a membership or whatever. This came as a relatively late aspect in one of our later meetings that this even existed. I just thought it was a regular travel lift way, and then we were sitting around talking about all the aspects of it. And Dana pointed out that one of the important features of this was to have a wider way so that boats from the dry, ready-rigged boats could be just brought across the street and put in, dropped in the water. And I think, in all fairness, I think that reflects on Dana's experience with his involvement with the yacht club, where that same situation nominally exists. Boats are on one side of the street, take the boats across the street, you drop in the water, you do that a few hours in the morning, you've got a whole little fleet for a daytime sail and race and regatta, and the end of the day, spend a couple hours, you put them back up and roll them back across the street. This is, that end of the Embarcadero is narrow, traffic moves a lot slower. I happen to like to have dinner at Tognasini's, and I try to avoid the weekends, but when I do go down there with guests or whatever on the weekends, the tourist impact in that end of the Embarcadero is unbelievable. I see cars backed up from the stop sign at Harbor all the way past the intake building, halfway to the rock, as a normal course of events. And sometimes backed up that much in both directions. It's an amazingly heavily used portion of the waterfront. It's not quite the same. I think it's probably, for the small boats, it's more appropriate that they be hauled over on the ball of the boat owner's vehicle so that there's a continuity of insurance and liability to the vehicle towing the boat and its ownership, brought out onto the ways by the owner with their own vehicle, and then the last part of that is who picks that boat up and drops it into the water or picks it out of the water and puts it back on the trailer, and how do we control and regulate and train the people if training is mandatory. Then obviously we have to have some sort of a key card system, but key cards can be handed off from a 35-year-old adult to a 15 or 16-year-old child, and the next thing you know, you got somebody dropping a boat on somebody. So it's a very, very challenging part of this project. I don't say it's insurmountable, and I think that the intentions are very, very admirable, but there's a lot of details in the operational aspects of that part of the program that really, really need to be looked at. And, you know, the city's exposed tremendously with the T-piers. You see kids and grandparents and people in wheelchairs and stuff flying around out on the T-piers with their fishing poles and stuff. And it's,
right.
It's amazing. So,
No, okay. Well, I think that, again, what our task here tonight, and I think you've admirably discussed what your plans are, is do we continue to move forward with you right now and see where you come back? But I also think that we as a city need to make some commitment to you. I mean that in the sense that if you're going to, I wouldn't want you to spend a tremendous amount of money and then we come back to you and say, oh, by the way, Terry, we're not going to allocate this particular triangle lot for anything but parking. I mean, that's the reality.
Right.
I don't know that.
No.
It's not my decision to make. So I feel that we as a board need to push the envelope and see if I like your idea about doing the storage and doing things. I'm a firm belief in crawling, walking, and then running. Instead of this grandiose idea, let's get some cash flow. Let's see if it actually will work. And so I don't have a problem with this, but I think we need to make a commitment too, and we need to get something done.
Yeah. So. Well, in the last paragraph of my letter tonight, right, I basically outline the future. And I say that fundamentally, I'm at a point, as much as you are, I'm trailing two other aspects of the city. I spent an evening with RRM and the public going over the center section Embarcadero plan and conversations about a convention center and a multi-story parking lot and stuff. Well, it happens that I have clients that are hoteliers and conventionaires, and I've done two parking garages. So I'm trailing that project to see if there's some way in which I can participate in a meaningful way in that project. And then, of course, there's the ultimate pie in the sky, which is the big stacks down there. I've had some casual conversations with large out-of-the-area investors who have not laughingly looked at that facility as a regional hosting facility when it's properly cleaned up and repurposed, because it has excellent freeway access, an incredibly large site, a huge visual presence, and a wonderfully large building that could be expanded on for convention centers and other kinds of hosted events. The Harbor Festival on steroids. So, and the restaurant on,
right.
on
okay.
one of the stacks.
So anyway, I want to kind of go back to this and bring it back to the board here. As I stated, I think that we need to maybe make a decision or have a motion or agree to disagree on whether or not we have Terry move forward in presenting a little bit more detail, financial, not spending a lot of money, and then Eric, we need to tie down with the city on their intent today. I know you had a conversation with Mr. Buckingham. I'd like to present that to Terry before he moves forward, if we as a body decide to do that.
Well, if I could address that for a moment. Yeah. I started with this at the city council.
No, I understand.
And so I've worked down, right. and I'm now following the protocol back up. I continue to have conversations with the mayor and specific members of the city council outside the Brown Act constraints, and I have occasional conversations with the city manager. So they know I'm out there. They know I'm working up through the ranks. I think what I'm looking for tonight is a general endorsement of the direction that I'm going in and a recognition of exactly what you say. Here is a more developed plan with some admittedly preliminary building ideas and someone who's willing to take it to the next level in terms of trying to develop a facility, do the budgeting, find investors. But I'm not too comfortable moving a lot farther forward if the city is going to build a parking lot there, or if the city is going to decide, gee, this is a great concept. We have disposable funds, which of course you don't, but let's just take this over and build it ourselves and find our own tenants, which is fine, and I've understood that, and that's been my understanding with city council and the mayor and the city manager all along, that at some point we'll get to a place where they will see what I'm willing to do, and I will see what they're willing to do, and we'll either have a memorandum of understanding that gives me a finite timeline with certain milestones and certain abilities to spin off some of these accessory uses into long-term leases, or not. And no harm, no foul.
Do you feel that the city's benefit on an economic basis would be a percentage of the gross rent that whoever would be the master lease operator? Is that how the city would generate, or would the city not, in your envisionment, not get any economic benefit from this, but public benefit? I mean, I'm just curious.
I think in the more traditional Tidelands Trust lease situation,
percentage.
It would be a percentage.
Okay.
And I think I'm happy with that. I haven't actually seen one of those leases. I don't know what the percentage requirements are, and it's my understanding they are all different and they vary and stuff. But I'm certainly ready to take that approach.
All right.
But I think part of this, I don't believe that the Maritime Museum as an entity can afford a substantial rent for a physical facility, and their efforts to move forward will be capped, if not stymied, at a 400-square-foot museum with a whole bunch of outdoor placements of buildings, which I think is a horribly inefficient use of a very valuable site. But that's just my opinion. So.
Okay, Dana, as the chair of this committee here, I would like to pass this on to you and have you either make a motion or give us some direction as a board.
Well, I think I would just agree with your sentiment as far as this is unique. There is no commitment by the city for this. This has been the hardest thing being on this ad hoc committee in the first place is we keep looking at this spot, and we've been asked to look at this spot by the city, and we keep getting that, but there is no commitment. And in that realm, I mean,
we'd be spending $50,000 on something that there's still no commitment on, whereas we have somebody who is willing to do that right now. Obviously, he's looking for a commitment. So I'm not in a huge hurry to jump into a feasibility study on something, but I would like to hear from everybody else.
Ron?
It isn't fair to Mr. Simons or anyone else who might be interested in developing the property or participating in his development, nor I think at this point is it fair to any other entity to include this board, and I say this with great reluctance, to move forward relative to a Morro Bay Marine Services facility until the city does in fact make a commitment, a decision, if you will, as to what it is willing to do or allow to have happen on the Triangle lot or is not. If the space turns out not to be available, then we're all wasting time. And if the space is in fact dedicated to that purpose, then sure, we got Mr. Simons interested. We're interested. The entire city is interested.
Eric,
thank you. First, I'm going to start with circle back around to your dollar question about the Triangle lot. Did some quick looking and out of memory a little bit. It's about 2.25 acres. As I recall, it was about $12 a square foot was the appraised value, which comes to about a little shy of $1.2 million, which was Lori's recollection when we were looking for a valuation of that for some other purpose. So about $1.2 million was the value of that lot. And that was an appraisal from probably 2 years ago now.
Okay, thank you for that.
And then on the larger process, so and in terms of what the city is and isn't willing to commit to or maybe the path forward, it seems that we're sort of in this constant, which is the cart, which is the horse, which is the cart, which is the horse. Knowing the old boatyard efforts that we did years ago concluded not financially feasible, but that was an entirely different location and different parameters. New lot, Triangle lot comes available. Possibility of using this lot for boatyard and other uses, maritime museum parking, who knows what else, other potential things could be built in there. I think the city and the city council is committed to the degree of empowering you, the Harbor Advisory Board, and the ad hoc committee to move forward and looking at this. We commissioned a market analysis. The first thing, you know, we didn't, the city council was not willing to commit to, okay, we're going to build a boatyard without knowing if a boatyard is going to be financially feasible. So we started with a market analysis. Market analysis said, potentially we can generate, you know, X amount of revenue. Okay, will that revenue support a boatyard? Oh, well, under what parameters? So then we started moving down, well, we need to do feasibility. When Mr. Simons came along and kind of, I won't say threw a monkey wrench in it, but brought in a different perspective. Up until then, we had nobody interested that just came out of the blue to us. True, we didn't put it out for an RFQ or an RFP or anything, request for qualifications or proposals, but we didn't have anybody knocking on our door other than Damon from Santa Barbara Yard, you know, interested when Brett was still here on the advisory board, which was a couple of years ago now, but that never gelled into any solid proposal where Mr. Simons has come along with a potential proposal. So now we're still kind of at that crossroads of what's the cart, what's the horse. I think if we have either the city commissions a feasibility study and pays for a consultant to do it, or we have the private sector do it via a proposal to build, or we put out an RFP and get three different proposals, and there's your financial feasibility. You got three people that want to build it. So sort of three different models of the way of doing it. How the balancing act or the needle of the thread seems to me, and I think it seems to all of us, is how does our private proposal move forward with no true entitlement, yet the city can't entitle it yet because we don't know what the true proposal and full proposal is. So I don't know the answer to that. I don't, knowing that obviously, cost-wise, there's a fair amount of cost to go into developing a full proposal, as you've stated. I think engineering and drawing is probably, and architecture is a significant
portion of that. I'm not a developer. I don't know how to best walk through that sort of process, but it seems you don't need to go into design and engineering of a building. You can go as far as you have and get a general concept of scale, shape, size, move forward. The real nut to crack is really the financial feasibility. Is it feasible?
And we're
trying to develop some general operating parameters and what the city may be willing to commit to. Mr. Simons is saying, well, the city builds and operates the waterworks, and I'll do the rest. Okay, well, that gets us a little bit further forward. In terms of the Maritime Museum, we seem to have a general commitment from the Maritime Museum to keep moving forward. I think at some point, Mr. Simons and his group, or if you are a group, or your army of one now, I guess, at this point.
I'm a general without an army, but I'll get an army once I see where the battlefront is.
At some point, you need to do your financial feasibility. And we're trying to feed you as much information as you can to see if it's financially viable. And if it is, I think at that point, you would be able to submit a full proposal, maybe not with the super expensive architectural drawings and engineering level drawings that you're going to take to Planning Commission and Coastal and whatnot, but just general concept sort of things. And at that point, I think we'll have enough of a product to bring to the city council that the city council can commit to. I don't think the city council is going to commit to, yes, let's build a boatyard here, without knowing it's financially feasible, whether it's
granted,
he providing or us doing it.
I think that's a really good point, and it's space that generates money, income. So perhaps following up on that, Eric, perhaps if Mr. Simons was willing to bring forward within a proscribed period of time, sufficient a proposal backed by sufficient feasibility analysis to clearly identify how much space is required to make this work for you and or investors and or operators, that might give the city an opportunity then to make a further decision about the utilization of the space. This is my rear end talking, not my brain, but I can't see it being financially feasible unless the entire site is used, with the possible exception of the dedicated portion of the Maritime Museum to generate income, generate revenue. There's too much money needed to build it out. So I'm perfectly willing to give Mr. Simon a little more time here. 5 months is a long time, and the city's waiting. And every time I walk down the street, somebody asks me about it. So,
and as we know, when we went into the mini master planning with RRM and that concept they came up with, the three competing uses were boatyard, maritime museum, public parking, and we know that they came in and did one version. Obviously, there's more, and this is, you know, Mr. Simons' version here is different, utilizes things a little differently, probably a little more efficiently. But we know with the RRM's design, with using the entire lot for marine service facility, boatyard, museum, and no real public parking in the triangle lot itself, other than maybe for the museum and for the boatyard, they still gain by taking the rest of that area, still gain 30-something parking spaces in one version and 50 in the other. But that was with the Waze pathway going through a significant amount of parking space. And as Mr. Simons has brought forward, he's proposing to use the road, which is, it's kind of like in retrospect looking at it going like, well, duh, yeah. Why didn't we think of that? It eats up less parking, so we may gain another 15, 20, 25 parking spaces. Add that to the other 30 to 40 RM come up with. Now we're starting to hit that magic number of 70, 80, 90 spaces maybe that we're gaining, and replacing what maybe we were going to potentially need down at the other end of the Embarcadero, where why this was being looked at for parking, may still be able to get there under that scenario.
So, Terry, per Ron's comment, and I think my comment, how long would it take you to come back to us, not spending a lot of money as we know, but you did mention this is a speculative venture. I've done speculative ventures, and sometimes you got to spend a little bit of money. how long would it take for you to come back to us with more of a cost analysis, more than anything else? I'm not so interested in that.
I understand.
Okay.
I have done a preliminary pro forma for this entire program, which I shared with Eric and the subcommittee at our last meeting. It was very rough and very sketchy. In order to do that, to just have to quantify the facility so that you could see what the costs and the income stream would likely to be, I had to develop basically what you see ahead of you, with the exception of the higher class architectural drawings, which I was encouraged to do by the early part of the work, and the supportive positions that the subcommittee and others took on the thing. I would hesitate to say they were overly enthusiastic, but everybody's trying to go through this a little bit at a time. Now that I'm learning more and more about this and beginning to study the project and break it out and start to look at it from a phase development and cash flow management perspective, I'm beginning to talk to prospective tenants. I'm looking at other leases. I have to tell you that in my opinion, one of the reasons that the boatyards per se of prior iterations did not make the feasibility test was they didn't have the extra income stream that the third floor rental facilities of this building have. And quite frankly, the third floor is free. It's got the same roof. It's got the same foundation. I can go up two floors and add a third floor. For all practical purposes, it's free. And in theory, if I'm right, and I've been wrong, but more often than not I'm right, it's going to be a gold mine on that third floor. And I'm willing to share that however the city wants to do it, either as a share of rents, and then the city can tell the Maritime Museum that they'll be on their own. They'll have to rent space from the master leasehold. Or we can do it maybe more creatively, I don't know. Haven't done anything quite like this before, but certainly create a home for the Maritime Museum that the city seems to be embracing. There seems to be a commonly held belief that the city should have a Maritime Museum. The city also wants to have an aquarium. It wants to have a parking garage. It wants to have a convention center. Great. You tell me what you want, and I'll help you.
So, would you be able to come back to us the next meeting in September?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So, I would like to entertain a motion to have Terry come back to us in September's meeting with a cost analysis that we can take to City Council as a phased approach. I like the concept of the phased approach. Really what, and then you then, if we could come up with some MOU to you, then you can go out and make it happen. So, but my Dana, do you have a proposal? I mean, a motion.
No, you've just made a motion. And
I'm sorry. My motion is to allow Terry to come back in our next meeting with a cost and analysis on the boat yard haul out facility. To the best of your ability.
The entire Maritime Center, as I've described it,
yes.
In today's...
That's correct.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to do it.
I'll second that.
Okay, I have a first and a second. Any discussion? Gene?
Yeah, I hate to back up, but my feeling is that the city should put this out for a request for proposal. I feel that's the first step. If he's the only one to submit his proposal, then we follow up with his feasibility study and a memorandum of understanding with the city and Terry's project. But I feel as a request for proposal ought to go out first from the city. My other question is this in the enterprise fund? Is this in the city's preview or is this in the waterfront?
From the haul out ways to the middle of the road, it is.
Sorry?
From the haul out ways, from the wet works to the middle of the road, it is.
Yes.
Once you get the other side of Embarcadero, no.
Then the city should be putting out the request for proposal, not the harbor department.
No, it's going to fall to our department because it's a boat
yard.
But one of and Gene, you have a very valid point. The one of the things that you've been on this board for more than 20 years. I've only been on it. I'm going on 7. And it seems to me, and also the seems what the city does, they hire consultants after consultants after consultants. I know an RFP is a little bit different, but I'm just not so quick to throw away another $50,000 right now. That's just my opinion. But I do grant what you're saying here, but I'd like to give Terry an opportunity at least until next month and then see if we can get some commitment from the city council.
Well, we don't necessarily have to throw up $50,000. We could have that part of the request for proposal to other people that they've got to provide a feasibility study. We don't have to do it. Let whoever wants to do it, do it.
What's stopping anybody from putting together a proposal right now? I mean,
I think to answer your question, sorry to cut you off, I don't mean to.
Go ahead.
But is the fact that, like he even said, that the city hasn't given a direction whether they're even going to approve it or not. So
Right. If
the city puts a request out for an RFP, in a sense,
they have to commit too.
Right. So by Gene's way, it kind of kills two birds with one stone. It does put more risk onto this gentleman here, because then now other people can also, you know, put in their bid into the hat. But at the same time, the city would have to then make that step.
If I could address that, I was a public works contractor for 15 years, did millions and millions of dollars of public improvement facilities in the Tri-County area. I'm very, very comfortable with the idea of responding to an RFP. If the city wants to put an RFP together and tell us what you want to see, we can go down that road. The way I've been discussing this with the city manager and members of the council is what's commonly known as a sole source contract, where the city basically says, we like you as a vendor, make us a proposal, we'll review it at a administrative level, take it to the council, and give you a contract. And the contract in this case would be the memorandum of understanding for a long-term lease based on milestones of achievement of certain segments of this project, the last of which being the biggest and most expensive, which would be the building. But at each step along the way, there would be physical works that would generate income, which would ultimately, should I default, benefit the city. So I don't think the city's at risk as much as I would be, and obviously I'd be motivated to keep pushing this forward as I have so far. But Gene's absolutely right. The normal protocol for this is for the city to decide what they want in either an outline form or like the RRM original conceptual study, write up an RFP, publish it, post it, send it out there and see if you get any takers on somebody willing to do a design build. I did several design builds for Cal Poly, for instance. So I can go that route too.
Well, we have Gene's comment here. Does anyone else want to comment on that? Or do we have any other discussion? Or we have a motion on the table here. Eric, do you want to say anything?
Yeah, just add one more bit into the conversation. Another possible process instead of an RFP is an RFQ, request for qualifications, where you basically tell folks what you want to build, what you want to have done, and people come to you and show their credentials, and you pick 2, 3, 4 that show up, and then you have them solicit proposals out of that. So it's a little more of a two-step process instead of a one-step straight to an RFP. It's another way of looking about it.
You know, again, and it's probably the most appropriate thing to do. Ron mentioned we haven't wasted 5 months, but it's been 5 months since we've come there. I don't foresee this, if we go through the RFP route, if we do this route, I don't see us coming back to City Council until next year. That's the realities. So I'm not in favor of doing that. That's just my opinion. But we do have a motion on the table. Is there any other discussion? Hearing none. Oh, Ron?
This has nothing to do with the RFP question or actually specifically with the motion, but I would like to make a comment, and that is that actually I have a question, and perhaps anybody that's on the board and or Eric can answer the question. The RRM graphic concept concepts for the Triangle Lot development included the Maritime Museum having its existing footprint to include the pad for its shed.
Correct.
And as Dana just pointed out to me, utilization of a larger building as well, immediate to the north. Do I remember that correctly, or does it actually say that?
Mm-hmm. Future
Maritime Museum. So, if there's going to be a dialogue with the Maritime Museum, one of the things to dialogue with them about, I think very candidly, would be your ability to utilize additional space within the triangle lot may be a function of how many square feet you can actually use, that you could actually develop. For instance, if they were given shell space and they had to build it out, and it could be that it would end up being smaller than on the RRM plan or what Mr. Simons has shown us tonight, which would mean additional revenue space within the development.
So, well, I believe, too, if I'm not mistaken, if I can share this, is that you have met with the Maritime Museum president. They're all for this, but they're going to continue with their path, and they're going to just see what happens. I mean, in other words, they're not going to just wait on this proposal or whatever.
Exactly.
Is that correct?
In the meeting that we had, Larry's single biggest concern was that anything that I would be doing would not preclude their continued path forward on the 400-square-foot pad that they've already invested in and the movement forward to solicit funds and get donations to build that building. And I said, absolutely not. In fact, we had a fairly technical conversation on how you could build a building on that pad that could then be picked up and relocated if needed or just simply repurposed it at some point down the road. So I think we have the start of a good working relationship with the museum. I've built them in as a nonprofit, non-income generated tenant in this building. But if I were allowed to build the building, West Marine, here we go, or the equivalent of that, put a big retail marine operation in that same footage, and that'd be prime space. I don't think a restaurant would be appropriate there, but certainly marine services type businesses on that ground floor are numerous ones.
Right.
But my heart in this thing has been to basically respect what I thought was the nod from the city saying we want, I think they showed 3,200 feet in the RRM plan for a future maritime museum. So I wrote that into my program. I said, let's, and gave them the same premier spot and the same orientation, and basically just wrapped my project around them and tried to make it as attractive for them, because they're a real plus for my tenants also.
Okay. We have a motion on the table. We have some more discussion. Neil?
Could you actually just read back that motion for me?
Could you
request Mr. Simons bring to the September Harbor Advisory Board meeting the cost analysis with phased approach on a boatyard haulout facility and full maritime center.
Correct. And we've had a second. Any other discussion? Hearing none, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Motion passes. Thank you, Terry. We'll see you next meeting.
Thank you. We'll see you next month.
Okay.
More stuff. Looking forward to it.
Okay. Thank you, Dana. And as we continue to move forward here, the next agenda item would be the update from the Finance and Budget Ad Hoc Committee. We did have a meeting. And we did have a phone conversation with management partners. Actually, they were very forthcoming in their discussion, and Neil has a presentation to give us.
Sorry to shuffle my paperwork here. So as Bill said, the Finance and Budget Ad Hoc Committee, we've met twice since our last Harbor Advisory Board meeting. The first meeting was a conference call. It was in June, and Ron Reisner was not present, but the Harbor Director, Eric Enschby, ad hoc members, myself and Bill were there, and Bob Leland from the Management Partners Consulting Firm. And just to give you a somewhat of an intro to him, and Eric can maybe speak more to him, he's the architect of a tool that was generated to a forecasting tool. It's essentially a very dynamic Excel sheet that you put in information and it spits out data galore, graphs, imaging. We have copies of that as well. But it's a tool that's been generated, and it was, I guess I'll get back into my notes and it'll also tie back in with him. In this meeting, Bob outlined the major goals and directions that his work was focused on. And the main concern that Bob explained was to look at the fiscal health of the harbor over the next 10 years with major concern for 2017 when there is no money in the accumulation fund. He was directed to create this analytical tool that I was just discussing that would allow the city to see how it could get to where it needed to be with a financially viable harbor. This tool is a very dynamic spreadsheet that allows one to manipulate the input, as I said, the input numbers, and see what the assumed outcome could possibly be. This spreadsheet was an area that, as an ad hoc committee, we needed to become familiar with, thus this phone conversation, this initial phone conversation, and understand the underlying assumptions that were used to make the forecast. It is our belief that the outcome can only be as good as the numbers you put into it, which I'll get into more in our conclusions. The three major indicators that Bob focused on, and this was from our first meeting, and I'll give you a teaser. We had a second meeting. So in the first meeting, the three major indicators that he focused on were where the revenues were headed. And again, this is looking over a 10-year period. So where the revenues were headed, what type of influences could affect the harbor financially, and capital investments over a long period. So then in that meeting, we discussed the current status and what the report used, but we didn't dive into the assumptions as much, which was our initial intention. He just kind of went over what he had been tasked to do. And so in our second meeting, he had provided us with the actual tool, not a functional tool where we could mess around with it, but it was his current working forecast model was. And so we had prepared questions for him. And so in our second meeting, which was July 25th, it was another conference call. At this point, Ron Reisner also joined us, as well as the previous names that were in attendance at the first meeting. And that was the complete ad hoc committee in the second meeting. So in this meeting, Bob went into a little more depth on the assumptions that were used to make certain forecasts. He answered all of our questions, so we were prepared. A few conclusions that could be made from this informative meeting are the need for the Harbor Advisory Board's participation in this process. Bob's request to us was that we continue to supply him with updated information and figures as it becomes available so that he can fine-tune his working model. And he agreed to that point that we made earlier that the outcome of this model is only as good as the information that goes into it. So it is also important to understand that the city will use the results of this forecast model to make very important decisions that will affect the harbor. And for this reason, we feel it is imperative that the assumptions used by the model continue to be updated and that the model itself be continually updated to account for any strategic changes such as grants, favorable terms on debt service, and new sources of income that can offset project costs and or increase costs. We have been asked by the harbor director to sit down with him and go over the capital investment schedule for the next 10 years as well. This will be a serious undertaking, but the information gathered by this work will be vital to feeding actual figures into the forecasting model created by Management Partners. We intend to continue looking into the cost allocation study as it plays a major role in the future financial feasibility of Morro Bay as well. And we also intend to look at other ways that the city can continue to increase revenue. And that's my general summary. If there's anybody else from the ad hoc committee that would like to add to that or fill in the gaps.
Yeah, I think that the one thing that I gain from the information is the financial data that we get from the city and looking at that we just make a little bit of money is a little bit off. I mean, they're making an assumption that the revenue increase is like 2% when it's actually 5%. So, I mean, that's quite a difference, 3%. So I think that if we work and that's one of the reasons why we created this ad hoc committee, is to try to get a little bit more accurate information so that when decisions are rendered, they're good decisions. They're not just assumptions. And so I don't think we're as bleak as some people may think. Isn't that what you would get to, Eric, to a certain extent?
I'm not bleak at all.
Okay. So I was very pleased, and I think we're going to continue this process, and I think we're going to have a lot better financial data, and we'll be able to plan our future a little bit better with accurate information. All right, any other questions? Ron, do you have anything to add? Thank you. Thank you.
I want to speak one more time to the point that Bill was just speaking about. You know, Ron, one of the things that Ron caught within there was, in one of the models, there's a very obvious graph that shows this massive debt swing, and it's in relation to the construction of the Harvard office, and it doesn't take into account anywhere in the assumptions any kind of grants, any kind of offset from the loan payments, or sorry, the rent payments that could come in from the Coast Guard. It doesn't take into account any kind of debt service, you know, stretching it out. It just focuses in that short period of time. So if you just looked at that graph, if somebody up the hill was just looking at that graph and didn't understand all the assumptions that went into it, it looks bad. It looks, the feasibility quickly looks very bleak. But if you start to tease out and possibly add in the correct information, the graph can get a little bit more feasible. So I think it's the work that we're doing and going to continue to do will be a good benefit.
Thank you, Neil. Stay tuned. Update on the recent activities. What is this?
Eelgrass.
I'm sorry. It doesn't say this. It does. I can't read. I'm sorry, Lynn.
Okay. Eelgrass Committee was established to as an educational committee. Eelgrass is a very important resource for the Bay. It serves many functions in the Bay, and not only here in Morro Bay, but throughout the world, it is decreasing everywhere in estuaries. And they don't really know why. Eelgrass is a protected species. There have been a number of mitigation projects done, and these mitigation projects, the replanting, transplanting of eelgrass, has failed. It doesn't take root, and it doesn't continue after the three-year term limit that they continue to monitor it. They monitor it even more than that. So we had a meeting earlier in the month, last month, because we had had word from the NEP on various research projects that are going on, and there are a number of them. These research projects, mostly done by Cal Poly and a couple by the NEP itself, can be grouped into various subjects. They will be doing mapping, which should be completed pretty soon in 2017, about where the eelgrass is existing and growing now, where it has been in the past. And people who are watching the bay, you can see where it's growing along the waterfront, but it has died in the back bay. A number of studies are being done on the water quality, with the idea that water quality could have a big effect and may be part of the reason, or to a lesser or greater extent, the reason that the eelgrass is dying throughout the bay. There are a number of studies to monitor the eelgrass, how much it, where it's growing, where it's spreading, and where it's dying, and the conditions that surround that, water quality, turbidity, temperature, et cetera. There are a number of student studies from Cal Poly that cover various aspects of it, including such things as how it's affecting the brant geese and where is it? How it's affecting. Here I go. The bird count, bird survey data, bird reproduction, the number of birds around. There are studies that are being paid for, are being granted on grants from Cal Poly that include genetic research. Is all the eelgrass in the bay the same genetic strain? Are there differences, and do those differences make it seem to affect where it's growing? There are also impacts on fish population and crab populations in the bay. These research projects are funded by grants from a couple of several different places, but the grants total $86,000, and they have applications for other grants on which we have not yet heard, totaling about $56,000. So it is an important study among all of them, and there's a lot of people who are working very hard on this. And I think Jean has some updates on the status of some of these projects.
Well, I talked to Dean Wett, who's in charge of research at Cal Poly. You probably all know Dean. And he sent me over a manuscript draft done by our Carly Ewan, who's doing a project, and it's the impact of elevated temperature on irradiant thresholds and carbon budgets among, I can't pronounce that, eelgrass beds in Morro Bay. So there's a lot of stuff going on. They're excited about it. They're in the process of doing all this study. I think we're going to get some good results out of all these people. We looked at it. There were three different possibilities. One was, NOAA had three different possibilities on mitigation, and one was banking, one was in lieu. And what was the other one? There was one other one. I can't remember what it was. But just, do you remember, Neil?
Yeah, I'm trying to. Straight mitigation.
Replanting.
In lieu of it's paying for it in mitigation.
Yeah.
I can't remember that.
But it looks like there is some movement towards being able to mitigate it out at this point. So it may take a while. There's some state funding going on towards there, and there was a, the Senate bill.
So, in reference to the, well, first of all, I'll start with it's a tragedy that it took it to get to this state for everybody to get excited about it, but now it's great that people are looking at it, because this research, just the genetic test that she touched on, to give you an idea, the grant that they got for that was $10,000, and by finding out those genetics in the bay, that will tell them if our population were to collapse, would they be able to bring in a variety from other bays in California to help for restoration, or if it's, and they would hope to find a variety. If they just find that it's one, then it's one genetic strain, then it's even more sensitive than we think. If there's a variety, then it's more hopeful. So that answer could come here within the next few months. The study that Gene was talking about, it's preliminary, but it's on its way to getting published in scientific journals. So we're dealing with people who are on top level science. And so in addition to that, I was supposed to have a meeting with the Audubon Society, somebody from Sacramento, who they're related in that they're sponsoring Senate Bill. I know I'm going to get a number mixed up. It's either 1363 or... I don't have it right in front of me. I apologize, but it's Senator Monning's bill, and he's from our district, and it's regarding ocean acidification, and its basis is comes from eelgrass, and the study and the preservation and restoration of it. And in speaking with them, they are pretty optimistic right now that there hasn't been any opposition truly to it, and it's still to go to the floor for a final vote, but it's heading in a good direction. And after talking to them on the phone, they weren't able to meet the gentleman who was supposed to come. His child, he was here, but his children got food poisoning. So, unfortunately, not in Morbay. But anyway, but they couldn't make it, and it wasn't shellfish related. So, don't go there, guys. We're on. This is a public record. But so then, in follow-up, we'll be hopefully hearing in the next month or so more about the Senate bill. But that could open up a lot of funds for further research. And they're pretty excited about opening up those funds to solve some of the issues with ocean acidification and its effects on eelgrass. So,
thank you.
That's it.
Sounds like a lot of things are happening. Okay, the last committee that we have as an ad hoc would be the Marine Sanctuary Committee. I did mention if anyone is interested out there in the public.
There is going to be a Marine Sanctuary meeting following a film that they're having in the Unitarian Church this Saturday at 3 p.m. in San Luis Obispo. Ron, do you have anything to report?
No, the committee has nothing to report. The event that you are describing is being organized by proponents of National Marine Sanctuaries.
Correct.
Okay, the next thing on the agenda, Eric, is the working waterfront designation that we would like to explore for our fair city of Morro Bay and
Thank
how to
you.
Go about doing it.
Thank you. I'm going to fire up a quick PowerPoint here. Or AGP already fired up for me. Thank you. So, working waterfronts, as you know, this is Harbor Advisory Board, City Council goal through our goal setting process we did here several months ago, earlier this year. So development of a working waterfront was a working waterfront policy and subsequent see if Morro Bay can be certified or somehow designated as a working waterfront became the goal. So council adopted the goal was, again, working waterfront policy and waterfront designations. Out of that, we developed three elements to implement that policy. One was research working waterfronts, designations, guidelines, and other such things. That would happen in fiscal year Q1. That's that little code at the end of there in parentheses, fiscal year Q1, which is right now. Element number two is develop a draft working waterfront policy for Morro Bay for city council consideration. That would go in Q2, which would be fall of this year, fall into winter. And then number three would be pursue designation or recognition as a working waterfront if applicable, and that's in Q3. So in the research that we've conducted so far and also in consulting with Henry Wise of Lisa Wise Consulting, which I believe we have a member out here, Spencer. Henry couldn't make it.
Henry Pontarelli.
Henry, what did I say?
Henry Wise.
Oh, Henry Wise. Sorry, Henry Pontarelli from Lisa Wise Consulting. He's up in the Bay Area, wasn't able to make it, but Spencer from his office was able to come if we have any questions. But tapping that source and looking online and doing the research I did, could not find any true official certification or designation or any kind of official recognition. There is no, unless you self-recognize yourself and call yourself a working waterfront, there is no certificate you can get from somebody and hang on your wall. It's really what it is a network of folks just coalesced into the National Working Waterfronts Network as the organization that exists to assist communities and others develop and inform and enhance their sustainable working waterfront initiatives and help folks like us, communities like us, support and preserve and enhance our waterways really through documentation and folks that have put together case studies and implementation plans on their various working waterfront initiatives across the country. So this group has got a board of directors. I believe Henry's on the board of directors. So they've got a lot of tools and a lot of resources you can tap to help sort of vision yourself into the future and what you want to be as a working waterfront.
So data and other things that they've got. So that's what I found so far in research in terms of what a working waterfront is and can be. So what we're doing tonight, or what I'm recommending tonight for the Harbor Advisory Board, is that we determine a process or structure by which we carry out our policy development. And in other words, start with our policy framework. Policy framework being a set of guidelines as well as goals, which you're taking into account when your policies are being planned and developed. Options to proceed, and this is just a laundry list. This is not an all-inclusive. This is not in any particular order. This is just some potential paths forward to help us develop our process and what we're going to do as we, as a Harbor Advisory Board, move forward. Join and engage with the National Working Waterfront Network. It's pretty cheap. I think it's like $100 to join, and then you get access into the inner circle and are able to access their data and their people. Obviously, we're going to want to get at some point community and stakeholder input of various sources to in various sectors, which I'll follow up on here later. Do we want to create an ad hoc committee or other task force or some kind of organized body to help carry this process out, writing, research, making recommendations, or do we want to do it all internally as a department? Do we want to engage professional consultancy to help us develop this process and other things that may come up? Recommendation number two is Harbor Advisory Board and make recommendations on determining what policy elements we should pursue. In other words, what do we want our working waterfront policy to look at and entail? And again, this is another list that's not all-inclusive. It's in no particular order. It's just kind of a mind dump that as I researched and looked, came up with things, wrote them down, and put them in the order that I came across them. So what do we want our working waterfront policy to look at, and what do we want to pursue? History and historic preservation, uses, various uses, commercial fishing, recreational boating, aquaculture, coastal tourism, commerce, retail, hotel, motel, food service, natural resources, marine services and repair, harbor patrol, coast guard, fish and game, those sorts of things. Moving on from the uses list, this is a continuation. What are the issues we want to address? Infrastructure, what kind of infrastructure things we want to look at? Public access, residents, best management practices, goals and objectives, action, implementation, and work plans, key partners, needs assessments, sustainability plans, financing. So again, this is just sort of a laundry list of things. Again, not all inclusive, just things I'm throwing up against the wall. See if the board might want to consider of things that do we want to look at and do we want to incorporate them into our working waterfront policy. Continuing on with the list, economic development, environmental impacts and protection, regulatory issues, user conflicts, education and outreach, and anything else we may come up with. And then recommendation number three would be defining and refining those elements and ensure they and the policy are fed into and inform the city's currently underway process that we're doing to update our general plan, local coastal plan, and downtown waterfront strategic plan. I heard a report from our Scott Graham, our community development director, today in a department head meeting that that process, as you know, is ongoing. It's done several stakeholder group meetings to get city input from various sectors. It's on a track to think have something packaged. Again, it's general plan, local coastal plan, and downtown and waterfront strategic plans, fairly large documents. And they take a while to implement. It sounds like by the end of the year, they'll have drafts of a good amount of those documents available. So from the standpoint of our process of a working waterfront policy feeding into that, timing is still good. We don't have a ton of time, obviously. End of the year is roughly 6 months away, but timing's still good to be able to feed into that and feed off of that plan as those draft documents come out. And finally, not in your staff report, in addition to the recommendations, we also recommend, we sort of determined tonight what scope, what type of scope our working waterfront policy entails. What do we want it to be? Do we want it just to be historical archiving? Do we want just to get oral histories? I know in the past, it might have been a cable committee grant that we got years ago. Rick Algert put together some oral history work where we went out to commercial fishermen that had a long historical ties to this community and just did interviews and did some oral history of them. Might have been through the NEP as well, I don't recall. But simple historical archiving is one of the things that some communities have done for their working waterfront initiatives. Simple policy statements, meaning, you know, a one-pager kind of thing, or a more detailed policy statement, sort of akin to our city's lease management policy that we have now that really spells out a little more operationally what you want to do. Do we want to create a visioning tool? Do we want to look at what our working waterfront wants to be in the future and what we envision it to be? Do we want it to be a planning and action tool? In other words, do we want to come up with achievable goals and objectives and spell out a path to go to those? Do we want it to be a financial tool? Do we want to look at revenues and expenses, not just my department revenues and expenses, but from a city standpoint of how to generate additional revenues and expenses and how to finance larger initiatives like this that the city's trying to do, like the boatyard and other things? Or do we want to do a combination of the above? So lots of things out there to consider. I don't think we're going to create a working waterfront policy tonight. I think, like I said, I think we really need to look at the framework, start out what sort of a framework we want to start with, and the process, and define the process and how we move forward. And then maybe tonight start feeding in some things off this laundry list and what we want to look at, and just do a round table across the board here, and then figure out longer term how we want to achieve this and what we want to look like.
Thank you, Eric. Spencer, are you familiar with the Working Waterfront organization?
Somewhat. However, if I'm not really at liberty to answer.
I'm sorry. Could you come up?
Sure.
Sorry to put you on the spot.
No. So, hi.
I'd like to say special questions is that, you know, the membership is $100, which is, I think, a minimal fee, but would this be a good organization for us as a city to start? Are you familiar with it, the inner workings of it?
From what I understand, it would be a good organization. However, I'm not fully at liberty to answer all of your questions tonight. Any detailed questions or concerns, I would have you talk to Henry. I have his card if anyone's interested. So
Is Henry on the board of the Working Waterfront organization?
He is, yes.
Okay.
Would you like his card?
Yes, please.
Sure.
You can get that to me. Thank you, Spencer. Does anyone else have any questions for Spencer? No? Thank you, Spencer.
Yeah, sorry I can't be more helpful.
No, thank you.
Tonight I'm here as Henry's rep to be a conduit for him, okay, more or less. So
thank you. So, folks, how would you want to pursue this concept, if you even want to pursue it? Gene?
Oh, I think we should pursue it. Sounds to me like another committee. I just what it falls into.
Yeah. I don't think sitting up here yapping is going to be as conductive, and I think that maybe what we should do is form a ad hoc committee that we should meet and report back to the full board on the direction that we should go. Should we have a public forum with the public maybe putting some input in too? So, Neil?
Quick question, not to divert from your comment. Eric, have you looked into any of the other policy that exists within working waterfronts? And if so, is our current culture close to those policies, or would it be an easy transition? It's essentially, like you said, we already have essentially a city lease management policy. Would we just be renaming it, paying $100, getting a plaque on the wall? And because we are essentially a working waterfront. I mean, so I'm curious if you've looked at other working waterfronts.
I have. The lease management policy really isn't anything we could draw on. I mean, there may be a little history in there, but it's not anything we could draw on to morph into this working waterfront policy. I haven't looked in great detail to other nationwide working waterfront policies to see what people have put in place. I've dabbled on the National Working Waterfront Network website to look at their case histories to see what sort of initiatives they took. And they're largely akin to what we're looking and envisioning here now
hey, what's our history? What do we want to try and preserve? How do we want to move into the future? What kind of uses do we want to incorporate? Where's the problem, the areas that we need to address, and how do we address them? And each community's obviously got its own issues. You know, up in Oregon, Washington, a lot of it is historical lumbering ports that, you know, it changed over time and how they reinvented themselves. So very similar to what we're doing, a lot of case studies to draw on, but no, I haven't looked at a policy specifically on different working waterfronts that people have enabled. And again, like I said, it's kind of the end there. It's really anything you want it to be. It's can be anything from a simple paragraph or two to, you know, this, we're Morro Bay and this is what we are and here's our identity, to, again, more detailed planning and visioning and implementation tools.
So one of the things that I would like to, you know, even if we do start an ad hoc committee, is invite Henry, who is on the board, to discuss with us some of the criteria. Because is there a certification? Is there, as you say? Oh, Ron?
So there, to address Neil's question and supplement Eric's comments, there is federal legislation which addresses working waterfronts in various ways. There is legislation that was enacted by the state of Maine and the state of Florida, which formalizes certain concepts relative to working waterfronts. There's ongoing activities in Rhode Island and Oregon and some other seaside states that are looking at this issue. Eric is completely correct that there doesn't seem to be a particular designation or a particular certification, but at least two of the states in the union have formalized their approach by virtue of statute to working waterfronts. Maine, for the purposes, having read the statute, for the purposes of preservation and taxation, to make clear, you know, who gets taxed for what and why, but with the notion that it has to do with preserving working waterfronts. There is a potentially very useful tool to the HAB or whoever decides to get into this. In 2013, the National Economic Development Administration developed a thing called the Sustainable Working Waterfronts Toolkit. It's a multi-page document that addresses many of the things that Eric threw up against the wall, his phrase. And one possibility would be for whatever the working group is to familiarize itself with that toolkit, the contents of that, quote, toolkit, unquote. Then consider the content of that toolkit in light of the fact that the harbor exists and the working waterfront of Morro Bay exists within a Tidelands Trust, the California State Tidelands Trust. And to see, and the trust document, I mean, we all have the PDF, and it's pretty straightforward. It tells us pretty much what it is and how it works and what the obligations of the state and the city are to that. And to reflect on the toolkit in light of that, and then move forward with an approach to developing a Morro Bay working waterfront policy based upon that work. I said moving forward. I didn't say develop it, but moving forward. This is a large task. Unless, as Eric said, one approach is we'll just recommend to the city that we have one nice little sentence that says this is what Morro Bay believes a working waterfront to be. But if it actually is going to be a, quote, policy, because that was the word that was used in the staff report, and I presume that some of that came as direction from the Hill, Eric?
That's correct.
I think the direction from the Hill was really, yes, we want to establish a Morro Bay working waterfront policy. I don't think at that point and seek designation, if there is such a thing, for Morro Bay to be designated as a working waterfront. I don't think at that point there was any notion up the hill of exactly what that would entail, or the scope or size, or what that animal would look like, and what direction they want. I think they wanted, hey, let's ship this down to the HAB. Great project for the HAB to look at and give us recommendation back up.
Now, what was their intent? Was their intent so that we could have like a seal and become a tourist attraction? Or was it the intent to, I mean, I'm just curious, or was the intent to, as Ron said, yeah, was it to protect it? Or was it, you know, I mean, I'm just curious, what was the...
Well, there was, when that process occurred, there was no, and I'll use Lynn, since you use the word, there was no problem statement thrown out there. Here's our problem. Here's what we need to do. Let's solve it with a working waterfront policy. It was working waterfronts. It was really historical recognition in terms of we are a working waterfront. We've got things we need to preserve. We should put a policy in place. I think it was a charge to look at what working waterfront policy may be and how we may use it to implement Morro Bay policy as a tool to preserve, enhance, market, use, vision, implement, all of the above. Again, I don't think of...
As an incorporated element of the general plan and the local coastal plan?
No, I mean, that's entirely my creation. I think given the timing of the GP and LCP occurring right now, it just common sense tells me if we come up with a policy, if a policy is, a working waterfront policy is developed, it should be complementary to the GPLCP and vice versa. They both should be harmonious with each other, and things in the working waterfront policy, that if the waterfront policy says, you know, we City of Morro Bay recognizes this element of commercial fishing and we wish that it be preserved and enhanced and call it Measure D or whatever, that has an element that lives in the GPLCP and policy guidance and then in a lower level, the waterfront master plan, which really, when the planners go to do projects, defines and uses setbacks and limits and design guidelines, and physically buildings have to be designed per it. Down to that level, I would think the working waterfront policy would want to feed into that and vice versa, so that if the working waterfront policy says we want all of our buildings to look like cute little New England clapboard buildings, well, the waterfront master plan has to have that in its language when the planners go to look at that. Okay, well, how do we? No, we've got a steel-sided building. No, it says we're supposed to do cute New England, things like that. I mean, that's an extreme, silly example, but that's how I think these two documents, or two or three documents, need to be complementary and coherent with each other.
Okay.
So that was, Ron, to answer your question in a long, roundabout way, that was entirely my mind creation of, boy, these things need to speak to each other.
So, Gene, you made a comment and a recommendation that this sounds like an ad hoc committee. Is there anyone here on the board that would like to be on the ad hoc committee or lead the ad hoc committee on looking at a working waterfront policy for Morro Bay? Gene?
Yes, but I need more than me.
I'll volunteer to be on it.
Okay. Gene and Dana?
Sure.
And Ron? It's good. You've got the professor. We've got the... I apologize. Historian and the fisherman. Okay. We have created an ad hoc committee of Gene Doughty, Ron Reisner, and Dana McClish. Thank you, gentlemen. I expect a full report next meeting. So that's what we're going to do. And Eric,
Yes, sir.
will we be able to invite Henry to give a little talk?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sure Spencer will bring that back.
Thank you.
And I don't know if we need to or not. Just for the record, do we need to take a vote to create that committee?
Yeah, well, I can make a motion to. I would like to make a motion to create an ad hoc committee consisting of Gene Dowdy, Ron Reisner, Dana McClish, for the purpose of looking into constructing a working waterfront policy for the city of Morro Bay.
I second that.
I have a first and a second. Second was by Neil Maloney. Any discussion?
Yeah, in the lead statement from Eric, it says guidelines besides policy. I'd rather not be setting policy. I'd rather be setting guidelines.
Okay. I will add guidelines or eliminate policies and put guidelines. Any other discussion? Neil.
I'll second that.
I have a quick question. Mr. Endersby, could the committee have the benefit of electronic versions of your slides, please?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll email those in the morning.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Hearing none, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. All right, the last thing on our agenda tonight is National Sea Otter Week. Eric?
No PowerPoint for that, sorry.
You getting into PowerPoints?
No, I just thought it was a way to get information out there and organize it so that we had something to work with and keep focused on. But I didn't think we'd get terribly far because like Ron says, if we really want to create a guideline or policy, it's going to be in it for a longer haul than just tonight. So, Sea Otter Awareness Week. Another city council goal was established in this year's annual goal setting, and that was the goal to take specific actions to raise awareness of sea otter protection practices and participate in 2016 Sea Otter Awareness Week. Sea Otter Awareness Week typically takes place on the last week of September every year, and this year it is September 18th to the 24th. It's kind of an odd group of dates in that it's a Sunday through Saturday, so they took, I guess a true traditional calendar date rather than a Monday through Saturday or Saturday through Friday. So it's a Sunday through Saturday. There's an actual Sea Otter Awareness Week organization. It's, I think, based up in the Monterey Bay area, where they put together a fair amount of activities up in that area, but other organizations, including our National Estuary Program, has been a partner to that for a number of years, and they do their own stuff here during Sea Otter Awareness Week. So council adopted this goal, so we're trying to figure out what we need to do to implement it. The work plan elements we came up with to engage in this were continue our efforts with state parks and fish and wildlife regarding established Morro Bay-specific Sea Otter Awareness materials. Currently, Fish and Wildlife, State Fish and Wildlife, is putting together a Sea Otter Savvy brochure, which is a handout and electronic media, print media and electronic media to be distributed that are Morro Bay specific. They did something similar up in the Elkhorn Slough, where they have a fair amount of sea otters up in the slough, and they had been experiencing a fair amount of human interaction, negative human interaction, not malicious human interaction, but as is starting to occur here, when you get 15 otters all rafted up and little babies with their moms, and people paddle up on their kayaks and don't know any better, it's a pretty regular occurrence for people try and go up and pet them and get a little too close. So that's not good for the otters and not good for the people if they get cited for it. So Fish and Game or Fish and Wildlife has been trying to develop those materials, and hopefully those will be coming out soon. We've been collaborating with them. And we'll continue to do so. And the other project that's been implemented here in Morro Bay is implemented by state parks. I think out of their museum and their folks up at the museum. They're called the Sea Life Stewards. They're folks that
They're basically docents on the water that are on kayaks that go to the folks that are trying to go up to pet the otters and just go up and educate and let them know what's going on. We participated with them in helping them, really from the water safety standpoint, boating safety, rules of the road, help them. All their folks are their operating procedures. They developed an operating procedure book, and one of their procedures that their folks have to do is get turned over in their kayak in water that they have to swim in and get back in it and practice doing that and be proficient in that. So we help them train and do that. So that's our participation in that, and we'll continue on with that. Our element number two, plan element two, is engage stakeholders and identify opportunities and ideas to bring to the Harbor Advisory Board, that'd be you, for input and recommendation. This work plan was supposed to commence in the fourth quarter of last fiscal year and start into this year, so we're just getting into it. So a little behind schedule, but it's not a huge element we need to do, so we're looking good for that. Element number three is implement the recommendations. In other words, whatever we come up with, put them into action in this first quarter and go into next year's second quarter for Sea Otter Awareness Week. And then element number four is participate to the extent possible in Sea Otter Awareness Week. So we've begun outreach to various individuals and agencies, state parks, fish and game, fish and wildlife, and the NEP. All are interested in participating to the extent possible they can. What we've done and what we're proposing to do, I had originally envisioned having a night either at the rec center or vets hall or somewhere of having speakers and presentations and talking to NEP and the Maritime Museum folks, or not Maritime Museum, the Natural History Museum folks. Probably not going to get a lot of speakers and participation and a lot of material to work with. What looks best is working with those organizations and what they're already doing and helping them promote and get the word out and what they're doing, which is what we're proposing to move forward with. And then fishing, our maritime, our, I keep saying the Maritime Museum, there's too many museums here. Natural History Museum, their docents through Ruva Shana out there pretty much every weekend with, it used to be a trailer, they used to have a sea otter trailer, now they're just out there with tables and other materials, so we're hoping to continue to engage with them. And then there's a new sign, the set of new signs that are going on the Harbor Walk that SLOCOG, the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, have got funding for, which are different. There's, I think there's six or seven of them. One of them's about sea otters. One of them's about the community, the Moros, Seven Sisters, Nine Sisters, however many there are. And they're going to be spread along our boardwalk. The otter one, we're hoping to get it installed and unveil it during Sea Otter Awareness Week. It's right at the turn there at the Target Rock area. So what we're looking for tonight is just kind of the Harbor Advisory Board. If you've got any other great ideas and things we can do for Sea Otter Awareness Week, again, we'll be working with the other agencies and helping them with their programs. NEP does displays, and if you've been upstairs in their place, they've got various displays that they change throughout the year, and they'll do Sea Otter Awareness Week displays. And we'll probably host some sort of an event up there during the week of Sea Otter Awareness Week and bring and encourage and bring folks in and maybe have a few speakers in there, but I don't see any evening kind of thing going on. It'll be something during the week at the NEP. And then again, continuing on with our efforts that we're doing with the Sea Life Stewards and the brochure type efforts. So really I'm looking to you for is sort of concurrence on what we're doing. If you've got any other good ideas or other folks we should reach out to or contacts that we can reach out to help us implement these efforts.
I think you're doing a good job.
You know, the Sea Stewards, my controller's daughter is involved in that, and that just started this year, and I think it's making quite a difference. I think interactive signs over there by Target Rock, as you just stated, is also going to make a difference. There is a increase of populations, and I think the biggest issue, you know, as you all know, Eric, you get the same letters I do from there's a couple people in the community that are appalled at people throwing things at the sea otters from the Harbor Rock, which is a problem. And how do we prevent that without having a guard there all the time? Hopefully through education. I mean, I think that's really the key. So I think we just need to continue that and work with other organizations. I mean, we talked about last week, Eric, to have a couple little key socks over there in the parking lot across the street from the rock, as in that weekend. Is that still something you're thinking about or not really?
No, it's something I'm thinking about.
Okay.
Talking with the Natural History Museum folks and kind of building onto their old trailer efforts.
All right. Thank you. Neil?
Speaking to the people throwing things at otters, I do have a lease site on the waterfront, and I do often reprimand small children for throwing rocks at otters, which sounds ridiculous, but it happens, and oftentimes it happens in the presence of their parents.
Right.
Only reason I mention this is that within all this, it's all great to involve adults and whatnot, but, you know, kid outreach, if there's some
in
way
the schools,
to,
yeah.
Way to, yeah, and involve the schools and get the children involved, the ones who typically throw rocks. And, you know, I don't know, we don't have an otter festival yet, but that's another. Should we have a kite festival? Why don't we have an otter festival and talk about preservation of otters and use it for kids and maybe show the Disney movie that mentioned us about 1,000 times? I don't know if you guys have all seen the Disney film Finding Dory in the Jewel of Morro Bay. It's all about the ocean. Yeah, exactly. Anyway.
Well, Neil, that's a great point about the kids. I have working with our new tourism manager, Jennifer Little, and one of the things we're going to put together is sort of a media and outreach package that we talked about sending it to every school within the county to tell them what we're doing, what the activities are, where the displays and stuff are, and get whatever materials we can to them as well. So good point. I'm glad you brought that up to remind me.
One other thing with the children is, you know, you guys have the guys who come and they lay on their stomach down at your docks. The classes come by daily. It'd be great if you could some way incorporate some more education into that. It wouldn't be hard for them, instead of just taking a left when they get off the bus, take a right and go over near Coleman or somewhere and someplace where they're, I mean, you can't control where the otters go, but they're always in the same place. You know, include that, maybe encourage them. Don't force them, obviously, but encourage them maybe to include sea otter awareness into their curriculum.
That's Camp Keep, the Kern education something program.
Yeah, it's hundreds of kids a week.
Okay.
Ron, you had something to comment?
Well, I'm intimidated because Eric started off by saying, if you have any great ideas, talking to the board, and he degraded it to good ideas, so I'm gonna risk it. What about the possibility of using Anchor Park as an event site? Are there any sea otter rescue operations that could get incorporated in some way? And do you, maybe an expert from the Monterey Aquarium might be interested in participating in some way, shape, or form? And then thinking about throwing rocks off the revetment at the otters or whatever, French fries or whatever they throw, it's outside of the navigable channel. How about a buoyed sign? Don't throw rocks at the otters, or something like that.
Is there an official mascot that's the Immortal Bay? Wouldn't an otter make a great mascot?
We are going to have the City Council do a proclamation for Sea Otter Awareness Week. Our official adopted mask. I don't
fit
think
an otter
in
the
one.
Seal right there.
Let's move forward.
Apparently
on that.
Apparently it's Dory now.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Ron. Any other comments for Eric to consider? Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it. Okay. That's the end of our meeting right now. One of the things that we all received tonight was a letter from Mr. Mark Tognosini regarding the city's thought process in approving certain things in Measure D and stuff like that. I think that rather than read the letter, I think that we do have a future agenda item on Measure D And maybe we should bring that up at the next meeting, at least as a subject, if anyone wants to do that. Or maybe the following meeting, we have too much on our plate next meeting.
This is under future agenda items?
Yes, future agenda items. I mean, we already have it. I actually, you know what? I mean, me and Eric can work it through, and if it works in next meeting, we will. I just wanted to make a public record that all the Harbor Advisory Board meeting members received a hard copy of the letter from Mark to City Hall.
I believe you received it electronically when it first
came
in.
That's correct.
The city clerk sent it to you electronically.
Yeah. Yes. And this was the first time that we've had the opportunity to have a meeting. But I know Eric is actually talking to Mark about some of his concerns and hopefully working through those too.
Well, Mr. Chairman, while, yes, I have the copy of the letter and I've read the copy of the letter, if the Harbor Advisory Board perhaps could consider the contents of that letter through the lens of the Measure D review that we've already declared as a future agenda item, I don't know that I'm comfortable getting into the specifics of Mr. Tognazzini's letter, because some of those things I don't think have anything to do with the Harbor Advisory Board activities.
That's correct.
But some of them reflect upon our review of Measure D.
And that's the only reason why I'm bringing it up, is strictly for Measure D, not for some of the other things.
Okay.
So does anyone else have anything else to add to future agenda items that is pressing to the harbor?
I do.
Okay, Dana.
That would be if staff could bring us just updates on projects that are going on the waterfront, you know, that would be in our realm. I'm seeing things. I saw on Craigslist rentals for space for kayaks and SUPs, and I was like, where is this at? And it's in Measure D area and just different places. And I'm just like, wow, we've never heard of this. Then I went by and saw some. So I think if we could be updated on those kind of projects, be good.
So like the new construction projects that are happening?
Yeah.
Like lease site improvement stuff that's happening?
Yes, that's what it is.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I think Dana's specifically discussing if we're renting kayaks. A new kayak facility is renting kayaks in a Measure D between north of Beach Street. We weren't aware of that. And why are they doing it? That's all.
This was actually new racks that were built, and they're renting the space out. But it's just, there's projects. I mean, I don't remember seeing this before. And so it just seems like that is in our realm of the Harbor Advisory Board to look at.
I'll get back to you offline on that one to get more information. I don't know specifically what you're talking about, but I want to get more information from you.
So I think it's something that we do need to be consulted on a little bit more. Any other topics? Yeah, Neil.
Can we get an update from the new ad hoc committee? Did we need to make that a future agenda item in order?
Oh, that's right. Good point. Yeah, thank you.
I mean, like all our other ad hocs,
yeah,
I'm just going to add it as a routine item. Whether you've got anything to update or not, we'll keep
it
on there.
Thank you. Okay, do I hear a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Okay.
I'll second that.
We have a first and a second. We have Dana, seconded by Neil. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So I'll tell you a quick honor story.